Okay, my members are sitting over there. Are there any members? Okay, no. Today this is the last sitting, as you all know. And before we get started and into the business of the day, I just want to make a few announcements simply because I may forget later on. People are so excited after hearing the minister and being on TV and so on that we become shell-shocked. So let me just say to you that the first announcement is that straight after this meeting, the AMC study group will be meeting in this venue. So those of you who are part of that study group, please just remain behind. The second announcement is that, and I'm not sure, Mr. Brown, whether the individuals have been contacted about next week's ECD summit or whatever. I'm not even sure what that is. Is it a summit or workshop? Seminar. It's a seminar. It's Ms. Kloppus, Lawrence, Ms. Gina, and myself who will be attending the seminar on early childhood development next week in Paarl, Stellenbosch, somewhere in the mountains. That's where we'll be next week. So I hope that the necessary has been communicated to the relevant individuals and so on. We will develop a report out of that seminar. Unfortunately, we were told that not everybody can go. But as you know, we are under severe budget constraints and so on. So any logistical problems, please just arrange with Mr. Brown. That being said, unless there are questions on those two issues, I'm going to immediately move over to introducing the minister and welcoming the team from the Department of Education to give us a presentation on the review of the implementation of the National Curriculum Statement, but also given, Minister, that this is the last meeting of the Portfolio Committee of the year, to also speak generally about some of the immediate issues and items on our agenda broadly as education, given that time of the year as well, where the matrix are writing. I did forget, members, something when I started, and that is this, that members would have woken up this morning with the news that a few matriculants had lost their lives very tragically in an accident. And I thought it's appropriate that at this committee we take a few minutes just to respect the departed and to reflect on the tragedy that has occurred in this regard. So can we just take a moment's silence? Thank you. Welcome, Minister. And your team. I'm going to leave it to you to introduce your team and to take us into the presentation as you wish. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me start off by sincerely thanking this opportunity to have an opportunity to interact with the Portfolio Committee on the review process. I hope you will also allow our indulgence to also speak to some of the initiatives, because I think it will be useful to locate the review within the broader context of the things that we are doing and would undertake or request an invitation earlier in the year, because we can't decide whether that will come or not, to then come and give you a fuller report on our strategic direction, which we'll be presenting to Cabinet as part of the Cabinet Quarter. so if you allow us. So let me just quickly introduce our team, having greeted members of the portfolio committee. Let me start at the extreme, and we have Randall Van. Let's start with Randall. From the department, he is our parliamentary liaison, so he's the person who really helps us to interact with the portfolio committee study groups, and is based here and runs our Cape Town office. We have Professor Linda Chisholm, who is the technical advisor of the department. She bears the memory of the department, to be honest, in all. She is the institutional memory. She's been through all the phases of curriculum development of the department. HSRC was very gracious to allow us to have her for some time so she can help us through these difficult times. The next is my call him Msu. What's the first name, Msu?
Edward.
Msu from the department, he is from the curriculum team. He is going to be doing the main presentation. Then we have Palisa Kyobeka, Ms. Palisa Kyobeka, who is really, who was leading the whole process, who really was the brain and the energy behind this review process. She was leading the review process. And I'd like to take this opportunity, Chair, to introduce our new DG Temporal. His name is Bobby Subrahim. And maybe I should even explain what he had, because he could have also picked up in the paper. DG Duncan Hindle, who is DG for education under the old establishment in the existing department. We've agreed with him that he remains to hold up the old department. So basically in education, we have Duncan Hindle, who serves both higher education, basic education, is helping us with the split and folding up the old department, because it's still there. He has to present reports, he has to do audit reports, and all other commitments that we have. And then we had a vacancy, which he was acting on, Duncan Hindle, in basic education. So now that we've requested him to focus on finalizing the work of the old department, we got public service to it's not even because it was a vacancy. So we requested Bobby, who was he's a veteran. He's been a DDG in the department in the past. He ran SAMD himself before getting going to independent work in education policy. He was also gracious because we requested him in the middle of other programs to come and assist us for 6 months to run through this implementation or these preparatory phases. So he is the person who's going to be running through the department. We'll be advertising January. We thought we shouldn't advertise in December. It's a dead month. We'll be advertising the post in January. We hope to fill it in April. But for 6 months, Bobby will be helping us through the, through this period. So what we are going to, then we have Dingane Ngobeni, who's the head of the Office of the Ministry. Again, it's a face that you'll be familiar with. So, Chair, I'm going to ask DG Kyobeka to lead on the review, and perhaps as a closure, if you allow us to really get Bobby to take you through the work that we're doing and the work that we're requesting, that with your permission, that beginning of the year, we also take the portfolio committee into confidence and also get their guidance in the direction that we're going. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. With your permission, we're going to ask Mr. Musue, who is the project manager now for the process going forward, to take us through the presentation.
Chairperson, Minister, members of the portfolio committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to make a presentation on the review of implementation of the National Curriculum Statement. And I think we should preface that the National Curriculum Statement grade up to 12, because it speaks to the entire curriculum in the system. As way of background to this report, I think it is important to note that 2008 saw the full implementation of the National Curriculum Statement from grades up to 12. So in a sense, we could celebrate that the country had had a curriculum that spanned the entire schooling the grades. With the result that in 2008 we celebrated the first group of learners that came out of the system with the National Senior Certificate. However, as the implementation of the curriculum proceeded, the Minister of Basic Education noted that there were areas of challenge that were continuously reported with respect to implementation, some of which were reported to have resulted in the manifestation of overload on at the level of the teacher. But similarly, there were challenges also in respect to the underperformance of learners, both if one looked at the local and international assessments and tests that the country would have run. Flowing from these observations, the Minister of Basic Education therefore appointed a panel of experts who have vast experience in curriculum and teaching to investigate these primary challenges. Just for information, in terms of who constituted the team, the members of the team included Professor John Volnick, who's a renowned academic and chair of Umalusi, Fatima Dada, Ashla Holdley, who's also a curriculum person, similarly with Fatima, Tsididi Polo, who now is with SAICE, Alfred Campbell, who currently serves as the chair of the Association of Mathematics, Association of South Africa, Educators of South Africa, Sue Lerner, who brings a wealth of experience, and she comes from NAPTOSA, then Ms. Jobeka and Ms. Penny Vingevold, both Deputy Director General in the department, with Ms. Vingevold at that point, the Deputy Director General for Further Education and Training. What the minister asked the team to look at was to identify the challenges and pressure points that had been reported in respect of the implementation of the curriculum in grades R to 12. And flowing from and understanding those challenges, it was to say, how then do we address these challenges? And therefore, she requested the team to further make recommendations of practical solutions that can be implemented to alleviate any potential challenges that would have been reported. From that process, what the technical or the panel of experts that we would refer in this regard as a task team did was to begin to pose questions that would lead to establishing an understanding in more depth the kind of questions or challenges that would have been reported. And one of the things that immediately came to mind was the investigation of the influence of policy and guideline documents that would have been produced to support the curriculum and what would have been the intended or unintended consequences of these documents. Hence, the contribution of NCS policy documents to the overload was investigated. The second matter was an issue in relation to the transition. As you would note, that there had been concerns raised that learners that leave from grade 9 to 10 always find it a challenge to deal with the transition, and therefore it was important that that matter was investigated. Similarly, it was for learners that came out from the foundation phase up to when they left the foundation phase into grade 4, it was trying to understand the peculiarities in terms of the challenges in that regard. But central to this, there had been concerns raised by teachers in a variety of ways about the clarity in relation to assessment. And the task team was therefore tasked with the responsibility to establish the challenges that teachers face in that particular regard, and if necessary, to begin to find mechanisms of how we could clarify the appropriate use of assessment in this regard. I should indicate that while those three were the fundamental questions that were raised, in its interaction with the teachers, the task team further noted that there were two other particular matters that were related to the support that teachers may require, and these were related to the actual support and training that teachers would have been exposed to, and the role of the learning and teaching support material that would support the curriculum. So over and above the three aspects that were to be investigated, the team further went on and expanded on the importance of teacher training, investigating teacher support and training opportunities, as well as the learning and teaching support materials to determine the extent to which these would have posed a problem in terms of the support of the curriculum and potentially how this may have resulted. Flowing from that, the panel constituted and said we will go on a public hearing process, and what it sought to do was to actually listen to the voice of the teacher, because it is the teacher who's in class who actually has to deal with the curriculum. And it notes that the panel had public hearings in all of the with teachers from all of the 9 provinces, and it also further extended an invitation to hear the voice of stakeholders, but meaning your teacher unions and subject advisors across the 9 provinces. You realize, therefore, that from the public hearings process, 497 persons or people attended the hearings across the 9 provinces, and that would include those that came through the public hearing process. Similarly, there was a process that was put in place to invite comments from individual teachers that did not have made it to the public hearing processes, from the parents and to the public at large. And we realized that there were over 500 electronic and written submissions that were received by the panel from parents, academics, teachers, professional organizations, and so forth. And the closing date for the submission or for the receipt of the submission was put at the end of August 2009. Flowing from that, one other matter that the committee had to do was also to go and check on literature that had also gone to investigate, that had investigated the challenges that had been reported in respect of the challenges. What you see, and maybe it is important that we indicate, that in the public hearings, both in the public hearings and the submissions that written submissions that they received, there was general support for the national curriculum statement. However, there was also a note that while there is general support, even at the level of the teachers, of the national curriculum statement, what it is intended to do and how it should advance us in the transformation agenda, there are specific areas that came out very clearly. One was the issue of the proliferation of documents of curriculum, which proliferation tended then to cause a challenge on the side of teachers. The second was an issue of assessment, which we also noted had been posed. And in this regard, we can indicate that what teachers started to complain about was the actual interpretation of what is it that they were required to do, both at the level of the number of projects that had to be done and the different types of assessment practices that they had to look into. And a clear issue also arose with respect to the transition. So it notes that the terms of reference that had been put began to be confirmed by the kinds of submissions that came. And teachers then said, as a result of the proliferation of documents, lack of clarity on the assessment processes, there was therefore an overload. And there was also an issue that in many an instance, the context of teaching had also not been sufficiently considered, and therefore it was important that had to be looked into to ensure that with the implementation of the National Curriculum Statement, the different context of teaching would then be looked into. And in this regard, it would have meant, and we will speak to it later in the presentation, is how there had been a notion that implementation of the NCS suggested that learners had to do group work without understanding that there had to be individual learning. And it was in that context that these methods had to be clarified. And flowing from that, you know, therefore, that the report or the public hearings gave both the strengths and the weaknesses of the National Curriculum Statement. Having come up from that process, the task team analyzed all of the comments that were received from the public hearing processes, and similarly the written comments, and began to classify them into specific categories. And it made recommendations to the Minister of Basic Education. And in this particular context, you realize that one of the recommendations that the task team made was that
the Department of Basic Education should develop a clear, simple five-year plan that would guide the system in terms of where curriculum would take us and how it would be supported. And you understand that there was a view that this plan should provide a vision of a bigger picture in terms of where the country is going in respect of the National Curriculum Statement and what the curriculum was actually intended to achieve. Secondly, a recommendation is that the plan also had to offer support to teachers, but as we do that, it was also to say how then do we ensure that would then also provide the improvement in learner performance, which is a matter that had been dealt with. And finally, it was to ensure, this plan has to ensure that there are clearer mechanisms in place to monitor its implementation through either external monitoring and other methods so as to ensure that the desired effects and outcomes on learners and teacher performance would be realized in the way that it had been put. Flowing from the plan then, a recommendation was also made that having noted that there was a proliferation of curriculum documents, which curriculum documents tended to contradict each other in some places, it was important that there was only one point at which curriculum, because this was a national curriculum, there had to be only one national, a set of simple, coherent curriculum documents developed. And hence, a second recommendation came that there had to be a set of simple and coherent curriculum documents that will cover curriculum and assessment policy from grades R to 12. So a teacher who teaches mathematics would get to understand what it is that learners would be doing from grade R to 12. So it was in that particular context. The second recommendation about this is that this document should be organized around knowledge in terms of the content, the concepts, and the skills. So in other words, it's trying to say the curriculum documents must begin to specify that which teachers have to do in class, so as to give more certainty to the system. It further said, this document must further go on and make a recommendation to the type of text, and within the curriculum, it is also to say what would be the different pedagogical approaches and assessment requirements that would lead to the achievement of the different types of knowledge that would be acquired by learners. And one of the fundamental things was to ensure that the document that will be produced would also then identify gaps and ensure that those gaps that have been identified in the processes would also be lifted and ensure that they are corrected. So that would be the second issue in respect to this curriculum and curriculum and assessment policy document. What the task team further recommended was this particular issue, and it emanates from the transition issue that was spoken to, that in the foundation phase, that the number of learning areas in the intermediate phase should be reduced. And clearly this has policy implications in terms of how it may be, but what it recommended is that the current number of learning areas in the intermediate phase should be reduced from 8 to 6. And that is the indication that has been put at this point in time. It further went on to say our curriculum documents must provide an element of specification and support for the effective teaching in home languages, particularly in the early grades. So it has gone to reassert that home language schooling, or rather teaching in home language for learners in the early grades was important. But it similarly said that while policy requires that the use of English particularly for those learners whose mother tongue is not English, but who will use English as a language of learning and teaching in later years, must then be started to be introduced in the early grade. And in this regard, it was saying how do we begin to, the department has found mechanisms of ensuring that the support for English as a first additional language over above home language teaching should then be supported. Finally, in terms of another recommendation, the committee or the task team went on to look at the support that is provided for learners with barriers and multi-grade classification, which are found to specific areas in the country. And it was a recommendation was made that for teachers who may be exposed to dealing with learners in those categories and in schools that have multi-grade teaching, special clear guidelines must be developed as a means of ensuring that those teachers would be assisted to know how to deal with the challenges that they may confront and face in this particular regard. One of the key recommendations that had the support of all of the teachers that have been interviewed and that attended this was the program on the Foundation for Learning. And it said, therefore, a recommendation came that the Foundation for Learning should be replicated in all schools as soon as possible. And I think it's important to note that what this began to justify was the approach that says we need to strengthen the foundational skills that are necessary as one begins to go through education, and these are your numeracy and literacy skills. And in this particular regard, it was to say, how then do you make sure, or the department must make sure, that the Foundation for Learning would no longer be a project but would become a program that is linked to development of curriculum in the system. The one recommendation that was further made was that the oversight of curriculum should be centralized within the Department of Basic Education and communicated as such from a central point. And this was an attempt to deal with the potential proliferation that had been experienced. You'd note that, and in terms of proliferation, maybe I should indicate that the teachers started to complain that there would be a national policy document produced at national level. Provinces would, in their quest to want to support teachers in understanding policy, they would then interpret this policy. And another level would come at the level of the district and so on. And this recommendation came that there should be clear, simple policy documents from national, and this should then be taken down to schools and directly. A fundamental aspect related to the third area that we spoke to on the terms of reference, which is your assessment. And what this began to, and I think it's important here that we take note of the following, that in the context of curriculum, the National Curriculum Statement, surely assessment becomes important for teachers to understand learner progression and learner knowledge and learner progression. That would be the one thing. But there's also an aspect of assessment that becomes important for the department to understand the health of the system in terms of the achievement of the outcomes that are so desired. And as such, what has been recommended is that there should be regular external annual assessment, particularly in mathematics, foreign language, and English as additional languages in grades 3, 6, and 9. Secondly, one of the recommendations that came as it relates to assessment in particular was that the way in which the assessment and progression, or promotion and progression requirements are currently contained in policy, they must be made uniform from grades R up to 12. Because you would find that the descriptors are different in the GET phase as opposed to the FET phase. And therefore, a recommendation has been made to ensure that the grading descriptor for all grades would be clarified. And the third recommendation in relation to assessment, which emanated from a situation that said in the past or in the current context, teachers have found that learners in the GET phase, as they migrate or they progress from grade 9 to 10, in the GET phase, you know that internal assessment, the division between internal, the weighting of the internal assessment, the CAS marks and the final marks is 25-75, whereas when you get to the FET band, you know that 75% of external assessment, particularly at grade 12, would 75% of assessment would be external assessment and 25% would be internal assessment. And it was therefore trying to say, how do you begin to bring a balance so that learners, as they move from grade 9 or from the GET phase into the FET phase, would be able to deal with this particular issue. And hence, a recommendation that has been made, Chair, that the balance between year marks, what you would call your continuous assessment marks, and examinations in the GET phase should be brought to 50% each, and from grades 10 to 12, 25% of the year mark and 75% of the examination mark. An important aspect, while all of this recommendation has been made, the issue was then how do you also address an issue of workload on the side of the teachers, because it was a clear element that teachers complained about. And the hearing began to point to the weaknesses in the current assessment regime and in curriculum that in the analysis of the team pointed to those areas that required mitigation. And hence, a recommendation was made that the requirements of projects as an assessment task must be reduced to one project per learning area per subject. In other words, there are instances where learners may have been required to do a project for each of the learning areas in different terms, and you would end up with X number of many other different types of projects. And in many instances, you also found that these projects were not done by the learners themselves, but were done in other ways. And therefore, it was a question of how you help the teacher to deal with the issue of projects. And therefore, the recommendation made to that the requirement of an assessment, the requirement of projects as assessment must be reduced to one project per subject or per learning area in a year. And a second issue that the teachers also complained about was the different levels of planning that was required of them. And in this regard, if one noted and particularly if you took a teacher in the junior phases, a teacher may be responsible for 4 or 5 different learning areas. And all what this planning was required is that a teacher had to replicate all of the different planning for each of the different learning areas that they did. And therefore, a recommendation has been made that we should rationalize and standardize the levels of planning that are required for teachers in different schools. And therefore, what the department should do is to prescribe the core requirements of what a teacher file should look like. And that is one of the recommendations that has been made. The third recommendation in terms of workload that has also been made, and I think it's important that we preface, because it's also started unless it is properly interpreted, it may mean different things to many people. There has been a tendency in schools to keep the evidence of learner performance in files that did not add any educational value. And these, in many schools, what these had attempted to do is that they would all be put in a file, but you would see no element of progression or relationship of these elements. But what the task team has therefore suggested is that learner portfolio files, as a separate and formal compilation of assessment tasks, must be discontinued. However, it is important that what this means, it should be understood that it does not take away the responsibility or the importance of ensuring that school-based assessment is continued, because that is the basis on which evidence for progression and promotion may be found. And what a recommendation is being made in this regard, that the evidence of school-based assessment for promotion and progression requirements must be kept in the most appropriate mode, and this could be in the form exercise book. It could be in a learner file, as opposed to having a separate file that is all glossy, but that does not make any educational sense. And it is in that context that a recommendation has been made. The next recommendation that has been made is on teacher training. The task team has recommended that there must be targeted effective teacher training, and this must be provided where it is mostly needed. In other words, it begins to point to evidence-based interventions of in-service teacher training. Similarly, a recommendation has been made to say there have been challenges of understanding the implications of the national curriculum statement at different levels of the system. Hence, it was important that the principals of schools, as managers of schools and managers of curriculum at the school, for the department who are managers and lead teachers in respect of the curriculum at the level of the subject in a school, the provincial staff who are responsible for the support and the monitoring of curriculum in schools and districts should be trained on curriculum and content and assessment requirements. This is to ensure that a common message would be communicated to schools and there won't be any divergent views in respect of what the intention of curriculum documents is. A shortcoming has been found that some of the training programs in higher education institutions have not sufficiently supported or were not necessarily aligned with the national curriculum documents, and it was a point made that an attempt higher education institutions should ensure that they align their teacher training programs with the national curriculum documents. A fundamental aspect that also came from teacher training, which is part of what would further enhance the quality learning and teaching campaign, is that teachers must teach for at least 5 hours per day. So there has been that understanding that came from the recommendations and from the hearings themselves. As it relates to how teachers, the provincial staff as well as subject advisors would be supported, the report made a clear recommendation that the role of subject advisors must be clarified. In other contexts, subject advisors are referred to curriculum advisors. And it was to say, curriculum advisors, the role as support to teachers must be emphasized, and we need to specify the exact nature of the type of support that they will provide to teachers in the classroom and to the kind of support that they will provide to the schools. And it is in this context that a recommendation is that we should then develop clarify the roles of subject advisors. And you know that there has already been work done in respect of the district development, and this particular element is finding clear expression in that particular area. An important thing was also to say the role of different levels of the system should be clarified. In this context, what it suggests is that the Department of Basic Education, the clear roles of the Department of Basic Education should be identified and clarified. The roles of the provincial and district levels should also be clarified as a means of ensuring that there won't be any unintended consequences in terms of the type of support. And this was also to ensure that the support to teachers would become paramount in this particular regard. Just as I indicated, that one of the other elements that the task team looked at was the provision and availability of learning and teaching support material. The committee or the task team noted was that in some instances the role of, let me put it this way, the report says that there was an instance where teachers were said to have reported that they were thought to be curriculum or learning material developers. But what the report then suggested is that the role of the development of learning, of textbooks and other learning and teaching support materials must be developed on a national basis to ensure consistency in terms of quality. That we need to develop a national catalog of textbooks and other learning materials, and these must then be aligned to the curriculum and assessment policy documents that are available. The second issue that was communicated very clearly in the report is that there had been a tendency, or a tendency had developed in the system, that began to relegate to the backbench the role of textbooks in teaching. And it was how a recommendation has been made to reassert the role of textbooks in the support of curriculum and in teaching. And finally, a recommendation has also been made that clear plans must be made by the department to ensure that learners in grade 4 to 12 will be provided with appropriate textbooks and learning materials, and that learners in the foundation phase would also be provided with appropriate learning materials. So that is broadly the kind of, these are the recommendations that have been made from the task team, and what we have given here is a broad overview of what has been indicated. You have noted that the Minister of Basic Education has also indicated that there are recommendations that will be implemented in 2010 to bring immediate relief to the system. But there are those that will then be implemented in a sequential manner as the process unfolds. And you would note that in this context, that the Minister has announced that the curriculum and assessment policy documents will be developed in 2010 and ready for implementation in 2011. In other words, the Department of Education, Department of Basic Education, and would have to develop these documents in the context and in line with the recommendations of the task team. The second recommendation, or the second decision that the Minister has made and communicated, is that the use of learner portfolios as separate files will be discontinued. However, school-based assessment must, as an integral part of teaching and learning, will continue, because it is fundamentally what curriculum is all about, curriculum assessment is all about. And it will then be found in appropriate modes at the school. The Minister has also said that only one file for administrative purposes will be required from teachers, and the Department of Basic Education has indicated or will indicate what the elements of the file will be. And finally, that the number of projects required by learners will be reduced to one project per subject per year. Chairperson, these are broadly the recommendations of the task team and some of the actions that the Minister has spoken to, and we will stop at that point.
Thank you, Mr. Minister, you want to just come in?
No, Chair. I'd like our team to make some additions, but we also have another person joined us, Vivian Council, who also is one of the DDGs in the department. And I hope we won't, my addition won't really be misunderstood as undermining the portfolios committee to understand what the processes are. But with the, after we've made an announcement with all these radio interviews, there are lots of issues that I think remained unclear, and I thought we could take this opportunity to clarify what we had picked up as unclear messages from our processes. And one of the key issues that I think continues to remain unclear is the whole question about OBE. To say, are we dumping OBE or are we not dumping OBE? And we found ourselves talking in two tongues, and I'll explain why we it's been difficult to say yes or not, because that's what we expected to say. When I made the minister a statement in the House, I did say, let's not even talk OBE, because something which really becomes a red herring, and we really, if we even use the word OBE, we begin to talk at cross purpose. Just from the history of the whole curriculum review in the country, that come 1990, the country had no option but to dump both statement curriculum frameworks, your Bantu education and your Christian education, and come with certain values, with a curriculum informed by the new constitution and the new values. and that was crafted into the OBE. And that's why it's difficult to say, yes, we've dumped. Because if you say, yes, we've dumped OBE, then a confusion arises in the country to say, because if you dump it, it means that everything about it you bury. So we continue to say the principles which remain in the Constitution of your non-racialism, non-sexism, of unitary, the values of peace, the values of internationalism, the values of patriotism, and the values of what kind of society we want to make, which are really, I think, understood and accepted principles by the nation. Those inform the outcomes of the old curriculum. And we're saying those remain, because they were not controversial. And that's why in the presentation, Sue says, people said yes to the NCS, because those principles remain. And as I said, we had termed them, we had crafted them as outcomes of what we want in the curriculum. Those remain. And that's why we call the process review and reform. So the nation should not think that we are coming, we are starting with 1990 to say again, it's a restart. We're not starting all over again. The principles are accepted. They are not queried, and at no stage did anybody in the country or any sector raise his comfort about that we want a non-racial society. So those principles remain, which were crafted as outcomes in the outcomes-based curriculum. Right? What we are doing is reform, and if you look at the curriculum, some of the things that were introduced are too major to say there's no major change. I mean, if you begin to change your assessment of a curriculum, it raises something big, so which means it's what would have been the pillars of your old curriculum fall. Your assessment are falling, you're populating and really be giving more clarity. So those fall, your methodology, because that's what your curriculum is all about. Those, in a way, are falling under this reform. So it's yes or no. We're keeping the principles of the outcomes curriculum in terms of the values and principles contained in the old curriculum. We are reviewing and reforming how we articulate those statements by giving more sense. We are going to bring the old syllabus. In the old curriculum, because of the values, because in a way, and I think that's what I'd ask professor to do, as I said, you stop me if you think I'm really going overboard and giving a lecture, but that's not what I want to do. But I thought the portfolio committee, as the main committee that we report to be quite useful to really be able to, because that's the only structure we report to as a department, to really seek more clarity and make sure that we have a common understanding and we don't talk at cross purposes. That's why I say, you forgive me if you think I'm going overboard. You see, with the old curriculum, you say you want to create unity. You want your kids to be able to work, to support each other, to be collegial, to be able to work as teams, or even individualistic. You translate that into a methodology. You do group work, you do the following. And the review says, even that methodology sometimes defeated what we're supposed to achieve as education. And that's where some of the problems came, that you have this noble concept, which we're accepting as a noble concept, translating into education into an educational outcome created problems. And that's what we're correcting. To say, at the end of the day, there are certain specific things in education you have to do. I mean, I have a son who's writing grade 12. This is the first time that he's being assessed in his life, nationally. When he crossed from primary schools, there's no sifting process. Schools can set up sub-tests. He goes to high schools. He finishes your grade 10. Schools can set the inferior test, but there's no national. And it's the first time that he really has to prepare for an A. And I'm saying it's too big a gap, educationally. Whereas, I'm sure that lots of things that we say were noble but have been problematic in implementing them in a classroom. You will say, for instance, those are some of the things that have to change, which unfortunately would have been what comes from the broad principles. So I'm explaining that we are keeping the principles, but we are changing the methodology, we're clarifying what we're trying to do with them, so there's a common understanding of what we're doing. We're enriching what we're doing. I mean, some of the questions will arise, who has said teachers should not use the textbooks? You bring a new curriculum, you say you want to bring internationalism. You don't want your kids to only know South Africa and Europe. You want kids to learn about India, about your Southern America. They had no, so you have a noble idea, but not support materials. So, and that's why schools kept people were using files. People had to scrape for materials, but again, we had not supported the curriculum adequately. And those are the things that we are correcting, Chair, in terms of the review and reform. So there is no confusion to what is it that we are doing in relation to the past, so that the nation should know and be at peace that we are not bringing anything new that we are starting all over again. We are reinforcing the very values and principles which I think as South Africans unite us, and beginning to bring in solid educational practices that enable us to get the skills that we require and the outcomes that we require. And I know people have been accusing us, we are saying yes, yes OBE, no OBE. It's true, we are saying yes OBE, no OBE. And that's exactly what we are saying. Yes, in terms of the principles, the values that are contained in the National Curriculum Statement, but no in terms of the classroom practices, that we should bring some of the methods that we know have stood the test of time. Group work is good. Teach kids to work as teams. Teach kids to be non-individualistic. But at the end of the day, they have to also succeed as individuals. Right? They have to go and face the world as individuals. So you must bring some individualism into it if you really want quality. Yes, group work has to work. But, I mean, some of the findings that I would have seen even in the primary school. Primary school, in schools when I was in MEC, teachers would complain, say, this group work doesn't teach kids discipline. Because at the end of the day, our kids have to be able to sit still and listen for 40 minutes. That's the skill of an educated person. So you should be able to see an educated person from an non-educated, even in terms of the way they conduct themselves in situations. The ones who can sit longer and the ones who just can't sit for 10 minutes and concentrate. It's a skill. So we have to bring in those skills. The skill to retain information, to keep memory, has nothing to do with rote learning. If you teach kids timetables, to teach them poems, to memorize, you are training their memory skills. But with a new curriculum, because when you said you want to be creative, innovative, and other things, our teachers drop some of the fundamental things around education, of really training, misunderstanding rote learning to memory drills as part of an educational exercise. So, Chair, I thought I should clarify to say, indeed, when in translating the noble concept of an outcomes based, not outcomes in the way people understood in Europe, outcomes as the way we crafted our principle, the country's principles into the outcomes that we want into education, that we are retaining, not as any other model of education, but those outcomes which are contained in principles that, as I say, are principles that guide all of us as South Africans. As I say, peace, unity, and all sorts of things, those are still principles that we are adhering to. We are reforming what we think in the translation of outcomes. So we're not starting anything new, so South Africans should not be anxious. I'll ask Bobby to really talk about what, because we had a long meeting, and to mention the stability, Chair, I've insisted to the department to say by 2011, the whole process must be finished. We're not bringing anything new. We're strengthening. There are lots of experts in the country. Let them help us pull these things together. So we'll have to work differently, not according to our old bureaucratic process. This process must be managed as a project. We have weekly Monday meetings with my colleague, the Deputy Minister, where we monitor the implementation of these processes. So every Monday, we meet with managers, they have to tell us how far we are. Because come 2010, the first changes have to come in. In 2011, again, we'll establish a proper project team that is going to implement that by 2011, there is nothing remaining of these recommendations. All of them are in place. We'll be working, that's why I say we have people like Professor Chisholm from HRC. We'll bring all the institutions in the country. They're all keen to come. We can, I'm making the undertaking that 2011, we will have finished all the processes that we need to do. If there's anything outstanding, we'll come back to you. So that we bring stability quickly into the system. And we really don't have things hanging to say what else is coming when. But I thought Palisa could also share with us how some of the problems came up about, and then Bobby and Vivian will talk about the communication, because it also shows up the communication. But the other thing that came from the review, it was that information did not filter up to the classroom. You will find in some provinces, this is happening, this is not happening. The papering will also come because every province was doing what they want to do. So we curriculum is a national competence, and we're taking all the responsibility on the management of the curriculum to national, and we'll just monitor and work with provinces to ensure that they implement according to an agreed national framework. We're working with them through MINMEC, but from there, we will only have one national process in the country, but we are working with provinces. So every province doesn't have its own little show around the curriculum. So I think Palisa could just really help us about how we, I'll just explain around the methodology, how we came into the province that we found ourselves, how we came, I think, how the misunderstanding around how the principles were to be translated. And well, we will just really talk about the process, because that's what I think we also want to communicate. And if members of the opposition don't have any problems with this, we'd also like to have their emails, send them again the review, send them so that when they do constituency work, of course, we should sing from the same hymn book to say, these are the things. So their constituencies will ask them, what are the things that are happening? So we'd like to really keep all the formal information, not only to schools, but also to get members of the opposition party to have the same understanding that we have as to where we are, what is it that we're trying to do. So if there are any queries also that they pick up from their constituencies, we can find a way of interacting also with their constituencies. And so I'm taking my chance to really appeal to the constituency, to the opposition, to also help us, because we're trying to do this as tightly as we can from the end, but to be quite useful to also get the opposition to be to be provided with all the necessary information, so that when they do constituency, there's a common platform from where we are moving.
Before I hand over to Ms. Chubeka and others, to just assure you, Minister, that all information we have goes to all members of the committee. So. Especially from the department.
No, what I'm saying is, sorry, Chair, to interrupt. There's information that will be circulating outside. Now Parliament is going on itself. We are sending out information what needs to happen. So there will be information that we'll send to you as the ruling party. We also would want, which comes from the department, which is not policy issue, which doesn't come to the portfolio, which is mere communication.
All that needs to happen is, as per normal, information needs to be submitted to the committee secretary. We then internally have a way to ensure that every member, even though you're in your constituency and so on, is able to get that information. So we continuously receive communication. So it's not a problem that we are on recess. Members who get correspondence, unless, of course, they don't have access to email where they are, but Llewellyn then makes a plan. So you're very welcome, is what I'm saying, to please send information whenever available to ourselves, and we will obtain that package. Ms. Chubeka?
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have much to add because between the Minister and Mr. Musui, they've covered the key things. Just perhaps to say the process was welcomed immensely by the system, by the teachers themselves and all the people we consulted. Just the preparedness of the department to say we want to hear what the challenges are. That's the first thing that came out very strongly. And secondly, that as Mr. Musue said, there were issues that teachers were able to say have been very helpful to them, and they felt that any refinements going forward should build on those things so that there isn't confusion in the system. Some of those, for instance, at FET level were around your assessment policy, your subject assessment guidelines. Those were extremely well received. Your foundations for learning documents lower down, very well received. So the minister's instruction was don't fix that which is working, and therefore we're taking those to build on them. But the third issue that I wanted to raise, Minister, is something that you were very strong on when you gave the brief to the committee, that whatever we do, firstly, we should be able to do, we should make sure that there isn't major destabilization in the system, that teachers are not paralyzed and they're able to know with this coming year what it is that we expect of them. And therefore, that guides most of the work that we're doing. And I'm sure Mr. Subrayan will speak to that. What is it that we're looking at doing immediately? But we can assure committee that there's not going to be a space for teachers to feel, now we don't know what to do, because that is what the minister has been very strong on. Make sure that they know what it is that is going to be happening as the year starts. And just lastly, perhaps to say, again, as Minister said, some of the or maybe the second last one is to say many of the people have thought that in the noises that have come from the department, we're more focused on providing relief to teachers. That is not the essence. The whole exercise was meant to provide space for quality teaching and learning in the classroom. So if, as in doing that, we have had to provide some relief, particularly from administrative overload to teachers, it was really with the intention of ensuring that there's focus on quality learning and teaching, which is why it is about the relief measures, but it is also about support for teachers to do what they need to do. But lastly, to say that in all of those areas where there was confusion, where there was stress in the system, what came out very clearly during the review process was that at no stage was that malicious. It came out of a feeling or a desire from different levels of the system to provide support. But in interpreting and reinterpreting, sometimes that caused confusion, that caused an overload, but it was never out of malice. So those are some of the key areas that have guided the work that we're doing.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. The Minister has very clear to us that this is perhaps the most important activity we involve in the education system. It's an intervention of immense proportions in terms of educational change, and we recognize that in formulating what we do specifically, especially starting at the beginning of next year. Let me just say that one of the issues that we picked up in the curriculum review process is A, the confusion, but B, the administrative burden got teachers into a mode of teaching which was routinized, and it was routine compliance. And teachers were very busy, but at the other hand, they weren't necessarily teaching, and learners weren't learning. So we're quite careful that even though we reduce the administrative burden on teachers, we don't continue to replicate a curriculum where teachers think that if you've done certain things, if you've got the file in place, if you've got your learner plans in place, if you've done your assessments according to the new curriculum, you've done your work. The emphasis very fundamentally shifting towards learning, towards learners learning. And the extent to which all these changes support that is what we're checking ourselves against. So at the one level, yes, it's very definitely reducing, clarifying, doing all those things, but we have to actively make interventions in the system to support teachers to ensure that the focus is on learning and monitor constantly that we move away from what previously was a big pressure on teachers to comply administratively to one that ensures teachers are professionals, but at the same time to give them the support that's required for that. So in terms of what we plan to do going forward is to announce right at the beginning, so teachers are very clear from the start what this change means. The worst thing that can happen, a lot of people have made this point, is if we allow some kind of confusion to seep into the system, it takes a long time to clarify and teachers feel disempowered. So we're very actively pursuing the clarification. I'm reading here from a draft statement that the Minister spoke about, that we're just touching up, that will go out. I mean, the one thing that's clear is every teacher will receive details of what the changes mean, and that's the target the Minister set for us. And what we are saying there is essentially what's the changes that will happen in relation to the administrative burden, in relation to what it means for assessment. Because just to give you an example of how things can go wrong, some people could assume that because of the changes, because of what we're saying of portfolios, of evidence, that we don't have assessment anymore, or assessment's not important. We're quite clear that assessment, we're trying to deal with the administrative burden, but assessment's a fundamental part of learning and teaching. And we want to ensure that it plays that role, and that's the kind of changes we'll ensure happen. So the split that Edward spoke about in terms of 50% and 50% going to 75 and 20% in grades 10 to 12, those are the things that we'll explain very clearly in this information we're sending out. The other issue is that, and again, Honourable Members, here, we recognize that teachers are the fundamental modality through which this curriculum is delivered. We can clarify, that's important. We can provide all sorts of other things, but at the end of the day, the teachers who must be equipped to deliver the curriculum. So clearly, teacher support is a fundamental part of our intervention, starting off very early. And again, I must emphasize, in the past, when we rushed things, we did essentially teacher orientation to a curriculum, you know, in terms of terminology and that sort of thing. Our approach here is fundamentally different. We're talking here about teacher development, in trying to ensure that teachers are able professionally to apply the curriculum in achieving quality education in the classroom. So there's a whole lot of things that we're doing there, including what the committee has recommended to clarify the role of subject advisors, to make sure, firstly, that there's an adequate deployment of subject advisors, especially in those areas where the needs are greatest, but to ensure that they know what they're supposed to do, that they understand the curriculum, to ensure that there's a greater professionalism amongst teachers, to ensure that our district support to schools are consistent with what we're doing. Because we know, and the Minister's made it quite clear, one-off training is not the solution. It's a constant and sustained engagement with teachers at the coalface that will allow us to make our intentions of the revised curriculum real in the classroom. Because we've clarified and streamlined the curriculum, great achievements, but we now need to make it real in the classroom. That's the, at the end of the day, what the curriculum is all about, is what is it achieved in the classroom, and that's our focus. The other thing as well is that we're clear that if we're going to make a difference in the quality of education, and especially the equity in quality education, so in other words, the learning achievement, learning performance of poor learners especially, we need to make sure that numeracy and literacy is emphasized again, especially in grades R to 6. So it's strong emphasis on that in clarification, but in terms of our learning support material. So all of those things, the Minister has made it quite clear to us when she speaks on the Monday meeting. I'm new in the department, but I've already learned that you don't sleep well on a Sunday night because Monday morning you have to deal with this war room of where are we going in relation to these things. What I described the Minister once in 2010 was to implement, but credibly. So it's not just rush and do for the sake of it, but ensure it's credibly implemented. Because we're saying, what are the basic conditions to make sure that the system runs at the beginning of next year? Then in 2011 and beyond, again, some of the other policy things will come into place, and there the document will clarify exactly what those things are in terms of learning areas, in terms of the textbooks and so forth. The national catalogs we spoke about, we want to try and get it ready as early as possible so we don't wait for too long into the system for us to have credible learning support materials. We will actively monitor what's going on in terms of the Department of Basic Education, in terms of ministers' responsibility in relation to the sector, but also work with the presidency, the Performance Monitoring and Evaluation Ministry, to ensure that this monitoring happens in good time. And then, honorable members, this intervention in terms of the curriculum links very much to some of our other work in relation to the distribution, production and distribution of workbooks. That is a major priority for us because it's important that all learners have access to credible and aligned workbooks that they can use, that teachers can use. The recognition in the review is very clearly that to think that teachers are curriculum developers, they can develop their own material, is problematic. From a professional point of view, it's also an unfortunate burden on poor schools because they don't have the capacity to reproduce. So we're trying to ensure that these inputs are available to schools and aligned to the curriculum. That's important. We've got other interventions as well around teacher development that's quite substantive. Those two are interventions linked very much to implementation of the NCS. So there's a whole range of interventions, Honorable Chair, that the department will be embarking on starting implementation 2010, but going through into the system. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Acting DJ, and I do think that a lot of what you're saying has clarified certainly the big overall question that I have, which is this. It's really a question for clarity. The plan for 2010 and the presentation are, of course, just some of the plans, because they don't then speak to a lot of the issues that have been identified. And clearly what you're saying is that a more comprehensive document would need to be developed in this regard. can I just, I do want to leave maximum time for engagement, because I do think that members have a lot of burning questions. I can just see on the faces and the eager postures that we're going to be kept busy for some time. Can I just ask, Professor Chisholm, would you come in during the engagement, or would you like to add something at this point? Thank you very much. I want to just adjourn for 2 minutes so members can grab the tea that is getting cold out there, which should have been early delivered early on. Let's break for 2 minutes, grab tea, get back, and then we start the engagement process, okay?
Okay, the person. Okay.
Then we'll put the room of Moko the door.
Okay, the ones who come back early are the ones who are going to be preferred. Let us resume. That's saying we must resume. There's some extraordinary buttons that I have at my disposal as a chair, and I use them. Okay, let us begin. That's to say, reporters, you do your interviews on your time, not mine. Okay, thank you very much. Let me see hands of members. I've got Ms. Mashishi, Nda, Mochane, Klopot Lawrence, Moshwana, Kubai, and Dina. I see the youth leagues on strike. Is that in sympathy with FASCO? Am I allowed to say that word in front of you? Okay. Ms. Mashishi was first. Just, I think for the department, just note down the questions because we'll take a whole round of questions and then I'll ask Minister and the acting DG to just field out to the team, right?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that the presentation is well understood, but we need to get some clarification here and there. And then I had the presentation from the Minister and Mr. Musiwe. All right. Thank you very much. I just want to be clarified because in the presentation, especially on the problem questions, I didn't read or hear about the teacher-learner ratio. I don't know how are they going to address it in this presentation. And then secondly, even though on the discussion or on the presentation they were talking about the many issues here, and they were saying that the teachers, especially during January, they know what they are going to do. But I fail to understand about the curriculum and assessment according to the plans at the end of the presentation, where they are talking about curriculum and assessment policy documents will be developed and implemented in 2011. So I don't know what our teachers are going to do in the meantime. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. Well, I hope the Minister knows or heard that at least the Congress of the People applauded the move by the department to want to overhaul the OBE, because as much as we think that it is correct that those fundamental principles that really embrace what we stand for as a nation should be kept, but largely the curriculum itself proved beyond a point of doubt that it had serious challenges. I wanted to state that for her categorically so that she may have that on record and on good record that we have started to be on that positive spirit that she was speaking about, which we've always been. Chairperson, I really do not want to take much of your time, but you will bear with me. this matter is affecting the leaders of this country, which is the youth in particular in school. I want to start by saying, for me, the as good as it is that the national curriculum statement is going to be introduced in sequential as it is going to be, the failure and the success of any curriculum minister fully depend on the highest willingness of the teachers to make it work. I'm getting to my question, Chairperson. I think I'm the only second. I'm only a second speaker. I'm not sure whether I am taking much of the time. Now we'll come in the second round with other questions. I'm just going to give questions for this round. I'm saying to the minister, the success and the failure of any curriculum fully depends on the highest willingness of teachers to make it work. And I am not sure whether you share the sentiments that I observed in the OPE, which indicated largely that it was not only encountering challenges of it not being able to be implemented holistically and without any obstacles, but also we had a challenge of the willingness from the side of the teachers. For me, did indicate that it's either we had a feed-breaking kind of a situation, or there was maybe a certain level of monitoring that was not done by the department, which I think would be fundamental this time around, that as we introduce the new one, the department must be able to put a very strict measure of monitoring, because we can't continuously, as you said, we can't continuously introduce new curriculums at the end of the day, because we have to have, at some point we must find consistency. And in finding that consistency, it means we must put measures of monitoring that we have introduced as a new curriculum. But the second aspect, in the interactions when the hearings were conducted, I did not hear the participation of learners, more especially learners at the level of, let me refer to them as high school, because I think at least starting from grade 8, I would assume those people are able to be engaged and they can engage themselves as well. And I would have wondered the situation where in those hearings, it would not only would have been teachers alone or union teachers alone. Learners themselves would have been involved so that they are part of the whole engagement.
Thank you.
Dr. Laura?
Use your mic.
I would like some clarity between the two concepts, workbooks as opposed to textbooks. Is it a process to develop a textbook, a process of scrutiny? How do we finally reach a stage where we have textbooks on a national catalogue? My second question is in connection with the whole approach of the method of teaching in the schools in future. Are we going back to the conventional approach where the teachers teach and the learners learn, or are we still going to focus on group work and teachers being facilitators? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just use 1 minute to put forward what I would like to know from the department. First, thank you, Minister. Welcome these changes. But can you take me slowly into this OPE or no OPE? The question is, if I make a wrong assumption, please correct me. But my understanding is, in the OPE, learners were subjected to predetermined outcomes. I don't know whether that's a wrong assumption. are we moving away from that concept? That's one. And two, I look at the system, but you do say here that you look at the district level and how officials at this level can support the curriculum. But I just want to submit that what has been lacking there is authority and accountability in the system. How are we going to encourage these two concepts? Authority, because at this level, nobody has authority or doesn't seem to have authority. How are you going to encourage these two concepts? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, I would like to hail the Minister for reforming ODE and keeping useful South African principles within ODE and not necessarily overhauling it, and say that we understood you, and no one will make us misunderstood you for that. And on the issue of hours, I need some clarification that the 5 hours per day, one will say 25 hours. My understanding is that there are different levels in the different phases, such that the foundation phase needed maybe 22.5 hours, and 5 hours was for the intermediate phase, and then 26 hours for senior phase, and 27.5 hours. I would say all of them, all the phases now, we will be talking of 5 hours per day. That's what one clarification that one would like to have. And the 5 issues that the educators will keep one file. Some of the files that they kept were not the files that they wrote. It was like when you wanted to know if they had policies in schools, instead of them running around to check for policies, there were files where they keep this thing. They didn't compile or write them themselves. Now, if we say one file and not clarify, can't they say all the other files must just disappear? And lastly, the textbooks for all learners in most places, although this was very slow, this was the status, except that there were shortages. Can we say that every school will have enough so that every child must have them? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I think we welcome the presentation. Firstly, Chair, I think for me, where I'm sitting, Chair, is the issue. I don't think we should be engaging it. Minister, I could be wrong, OBE or no OBE. I don't think that's the fundamental issue here. The fundamental issue for us that we should be engaging is to say, what is it that we want to produce out of our learners, and what is it that we want to improve within the schooling system. The review of the implementation of the National Curriculum Statement. I think Honorable Mida, my understanding is not the same from where you are coming from, where you supporting the overall or outright doing away with OBE. But maybe the Minister would correctly just give clarity to that. I think many members were saying that. But I think, Chair, one of the things that I've picked up out of the presentation is that we've got to look at inputs or how we deal with issues around the schools, different areas of schools. For example, you've got rural schools, you've got township schools, and your former model city schools. Their challenges are not the same. And what we would want to know from Mr. Musu is that as part of the inputs that we're coming through, were we getting the same challenges that are coming from those schools? Are they different? What are the challenges, the category of those schools? But secondly, coming to the issue of projects, I also have a son, Chair, and you said a number of times, and you'd note in terms of the projects that are there, how they are able to open the mind of the child to be able to, but even the reception skills. And I'm just asking that we should not dwell, because if a child is given some projects to go and undertake and develop this, and come back, unless if I don't understand the project that they're talking about. But if this is what I experienced at home with my son, they're definitely valuable. But the issue is the resources that support that child to be able to do that research. Because if a child is given a research and needs to go to a library? Do we have library facilities to support that child to be able to undertake that research? It's not necessarily the project that is a problem, it's the resources that support the child. If a child comes from a family that is well off, where there's a computer, access to internet and all those things, the child will do well because he has access to those things, would be able to do the projects and submission and get the assessment that the child requires. But if a child comes from a disadvantaged family that they can't even afford for a child to go and search the web and do the project that they're given, therefore it's a challenge. So hence I'm asking my question in categories of the rural, township and model C schools, in classes of society that we have today, in order so that we don't perpetuate and discriminate the child, the children that do not have from their families, poor families, that are not able to participate fully and equally with others. The other issue, Chair, which I think needs to, I might not understand the issue, on the teaching of English as a first additional language. Is this intention to make it compulsory, or are we saying it's an optional issue? And maybe I could be corrected if I do not understand it correctly. I was actually consulting this side, trying to understand that, whether it means that if I'm Shangani, then Xitsonga would be my first language, and then English should be the first additional language, or what does it mean? And does it become compulsory? And what are the implications? Especially to the schools, for example, where the children, the Afrikaans and all those things, schools where a child might be doing Afrikaans and preferably wanting to do another African language except English. What does it mean in those schools? And again, it goes to the issue of STPs being able to prescribe even the languages within the schools. How are we dealing with that? I think the issue of textbooks was asked, we'll take that. Yeah, no, I think that's all from my side to share, but the important thing is us not to be trapped. I think I'm just appealing that I don't think it's correct for us to be trapped in the discussion of OBE or no OBE. That's my view, Chair.
Yeah. I think what we're going to do is we're going to just allow Minister and the acting DG to farm out questions so that we don't. Oh, sorry, Ms. Mashish. I thought I had to come back this way. No,
it was a mistake. It's not Mashish. It's Gina, the person, not my sister.
I'm sorry.
She's in okay. Chairperson, I'm interested in in the presentation, there is a bullet where it talks of the oversight of the curriculum that should be centralized around the Department of Education. Everything must be done around the Department of Basic Education. And I'm interested in knowing exactly what is it that they mean there. I'm referring to teacher development that is always taking place. And from where you are coming from, it was a little bit, I think, I'm a little bit concerned with the way it has been done. When we talk of teacher development, we are now revising the curriculum, but really I feel that somehow we lost it, because there were so many initiatives, there were so many sponsors or stakeholders that were coming up to in the name of supporting the educators, and somehow, somewhere, the educators were being a little bit confused, because a certain NGO could come up with the support of educators. Yes, it was OBE in that fashion, but you find that somehow, somewhere, there are these contradictory information that was being flooded to the educators. I just wonder how can we, the Department of Basic Education, make sure that that thing is being controlled. Let us not see, it was more of a business, let me say so, the way it was done, and definitely the people that were being affected were the teachers and ultimately the learners, because there was that confusion among the teachers. Can I also ask, when you talk of the reduction of the learning areas, especially in the intermediate phase. I'm not sure really how are they going to be reduced. Maybe we are not there, we are not in the workshop. But I was saying we are totally doing away with some of those learning areas, or we are saying we have taken some aspects and make sure that we incorporate it in other learning areas. If I can keep it clarified on that one. Maybe just even to get them, which are those that are said to be done away with. And there is another, you said the teacher training, you are targeting the intensive training to the most, where it is mostly needed, to those who needed it most. I'm a little bit confused because I think everyone within the Department of Education, they all need training. So if ever I can be clarified exactly, and also on the model that is going to be used when this thing is being rolled out, because we know the cascading model that was used, the hiccups and the confusion that were there. If we can clarify for us really. How are you planning to train everyone? Because I think everyone needs this education most within the Department of Education. Lastly, Chair, when I was saying the reduction, I'm a little bit confused. Is the reduction of the learning errors in the foundation phase is going to be implemented as from next year, or we are putting it to 2011? I haven't been clarified there. Thank you.
Do you have?
Over to you. I'll take the easier questions and then the TT will take the difficult ones and colleagues will share. And then take the broad ones so that I don't go into specificity. I think the first question was on learner ratios. And when we started, Chair, I said, and that's where we said, we'll request an opportunity to make a full presentation on the broad changes that we want to bring in education. We're requested to talk about the implementation of the curriculum. That's why we made a special request. But we can't do that. That's why we didn't get into it, because it's not what we had spoken about. And what we want teachers to do is to do what they did this year for 2011. So it's not that we're not bringing anything which is not there, so that people don't think that there's nothing to do. We are starting off with the doables, which we think won't disrupt but will enable teachers to focus on their work. That's why we're talking about workloads, your submissions, all the doables which don't need us to go into details and consult much more broadly. So they continue doing what they're doing with the reduction or with the streamlining of some of the administrative burdens that they had raised themselves, and use 2011 completely to work with teams to develop what will, in the old language, input as a syllabus, to say in this area, much more, because the review cells have to be very specific about that which we want. And we are going to work on those details to the final details this year to be implemented in 2011. So that which they'll be doing this will be much more clarified so there's no confusion about what we want. And I really appreciate what the COPE member said about really applauding the department on what we're doing. And want to fully agree with you is that, I mean, from my experience in the province, it has been very useful to work with learners on certain areas where we some programs that we've entered into. So I don't maybe want to give examples, just to accept that it is a very necessary exercise and will ensure that the department, as we proceed, especially in the implementations, in the monitoring, in the oversight, that our learners through the learner representative councils are empowered to also take responsibility. I mean, for me, it's a very good to train our kids to take responsibility for their education and be empowered to really know how to do this. So I fully agree with what you're saying. In terms of teachers, again, I fully agree with you that the system falls and stands on teachers. That's the bottom line. A good teacher is a good school. You could have the best facilities. If you don't have good teachers, you have a problem. Because even the schools that work, they work because they are good teachers in those schools, not because they have superior facilities. They have good managers and good teachers. And what I want to say, Chair, that the establishment of a new department gives us a fresh opportunity.
again, when you come and make the representation, we'll even talk to you about the organogram, because we're focusing on the key pillars of education. And teachers are a key pillar. And that's why we've submitted to public service and administration a full branch on teacher development and teacher support, amongst other things, which will really focus on the things that we want to do, streamline our methodology, support provinces on teacher development, because all these things will be nil if our teachers are not capable. But even in terms of the attitudes, the working relationships, I can say at a national level, we have a very good professional relationship with teacher organizations. They're supportive of our program, and we keep on engaging them where we have difficulties. But indeed, we have pockets of difficulties, and that's why for us, a very good working relationship with teacher unions is very important, to make sure that as we are prepared to throw the book at them, and that's what we're committing to provinces, there's ill behavior, there are rules to protect the children in the state. If a teacher doesn't come to work, or a teacher carries themselves in a certain way, follow the rules and make sure that indeed we begin to implement what is in the Labor Relations Act, which to a very large extent is adequate to make sure that everybody complies with the law. So we throw the book at them, but we're also working closely with teachers to make sure that indeed we don't have this antagonistic relationship. But I agree with you that it's very important to get teachers on board, skilled and oriented. And that's why I say, with the new branches or the new organogram, which again, Chair, I want to present to you, we're emphasizing the curriculum, because schooling is about curriculum. That's the bottom line. Your values, your content, your knowledge, the methodology, you get from the curriculum. So we started off with the first key thing, which is the curriculum. Our next key thing is the teachers, to make sure that those that implement can do it and can do it quite well. So, as I say, I'll jump around so I guess colleagues will... So I've referred to the hearings. The one that I want to take is the other ones are really webbooks and textbooks. I'm going to ask colleagues to clarify what's the difference between a webbook and textbook and what methodology you're going to use. I'll now speak like a teacher, because I think we'll understand each other. In every learning situation, you don't enter a classroom after the winter. You must determine your outcome. If I'm going to a history class, I'm going to teach them on Monday. I must know that by the end of the lesson, what must my learners know? And that guides how I plan, guides my methodology, guides my resources, guides everything. So you must come with a predetermined outcome. Otherwise, you'll go in class not knowing what you want to do. And that's what we used to tell teachers when we train them. We used to call it an aim, that you must go into a classroom with an aim. Then you work out your objectives. And that determines your methodology and your resources. So it is a given. Otherwise, you don't know what you're going to do in class. Why you should go into class. And I can give you, I'm going to teach kids on Monday. I have to know what is that I want them to achieve with that lesson. Whether I want them to know that Mandela is a product of his history, certainly predetermined, is going to determine my slant. Or whether I want to say he's a maker of history, it's a slant that I'm going to take. It's going to determine how I approach the subject. So it's a given. So learners will always, and they have been, found themselves getting into situations where their educators have determined the objectives. So it's continuing. That's the business of schooling, of predetermined objectives. We have principles which determine what your broad outline is. Those is what we call the OBE. That's why now the debate of whether OBE or not, that's why I said, let's maybe drop the thing. It's a red herring. We end up not really knowing what we're talking about. But we're talking, my understanding and interpretation of OBE, we talk about different things about OBE. My understanding, which I think is the understanding of most colleagues, that the principles, if you look at those national curriculum statements, it's the principles that, as a country, we hold, which are informed by our constitution. And those have been said, those are the outcomes that we want as a country. And we're saying it's inadequate if you don't reduce those outcomes into your clear aims, your clear objectives, and your clear areas. And that's what we say has been a gap with OBE. But there's nothing wrong with the principles. What has been missing is this huge gap of really more clarifying how you achieve those objectives. To say we want our kids to grow up as patriots is not good enough. If we don't say to be patriots, it means we have to learn about the histories of different racial groups in our country to make our kids to really see peace, to see a gender, to see women as even contributors of history. So it's going to determine what you even put in your subject area. But if we have not clarified teachers and get them to be doing work on their own, we end up with all proliferation of papers and everybody doing their course. So I don't want to but it is, and I'm ready to continue with you as a teacher to say, kids will. The thing focus about school fires, no person then will take. About oversight, we're saying, even in the statement, curriculum is a national competency. And if it's a national competency, we're saying, and that's one function that, one power we have as a national department, because there's only one single system of education in the country, with one ministry. The others are provincial education departments, they're not ministries. There's one single system of department with one single ministry, and which determines the national curriculum. And so we're saying all the paperwork, all the frameworks, and even the determination of textbooks, are going to work with provinces. But you can't have a situation where you determine the curriculum, you also don't determine what supports your curriculum. We're going to work with provinces to finalize and have a national catalog from where they can pick up. We're not going to choose ourselves, but it's going to be centralized. In terms of circulars that go into provinces, we're not going to allow provinces, because that's where the papering came in, from what Balsa is saying. Everybody tells their own story. That's why at the end of the day, there were 10 different stories about what it is that we need to achieve. So I'm saying there's going to be only one story, as far as the curriculum is concerned. We're all going to sing from the same hymn sheet. That's what we're saying. Even in oversight, Balsa, who is in charge of curriculum implementation, she will have to give me every 3 months to say, how far are we progressing? I don't want her to tell me what the province says. I want her to tell me, because that's our function as national, to tell me school in Dian. When I say, what is happening in Dian? She has to tell me national, because that's the function of national. She has to tell me about the school in Bumbul. So we work with provinces to get that information, but the curriculum implementation people have to take responsibility of oversight of that which we are doing. Because if we plan nationally, we don't have an implementation plan and monitor it. It's really fun from living. You just didn't see me. I have no time to really manage any or as long as we pavement. Sometimes they'll push a bully who pee in the way who pee. It's a bully and jan. And that's what the approach that we want to do. In terms of learning errors, we definitely cannot do it this year. There's a huge debate, but also at a broad level. Whilst we're doing this curriculum review, I took an opportunity to really look at what other countries do as curriculum. I was quite surprised to see how the successful countries do very little. Your Americans do only 3 in the study. They really don't do all these things about history, technology, all of them. They don't do those things. They focus on basic skills, literacy, numeracy, and writing in your earlier phases. Some of all these 100 things that we want our kids to do all at the same time are not done by some of these. Even your Malaysia, if you look at the curriculum, it's not that widespread. And I think, again, it's a country which just took everything that was attractive into the curriculum. I'm saying, let's focus on the core skills, the numerous literacy and those 3 skills, and we will phase them in. Some of the things these kids will learn on their own, they can learn in the layer phase, as long as they have developed the correct skills of reading and writing and counting. The other things will, I think, fall in place on their own. So we're going to be, again, consulting broadly to say what goes, but definitely some will have to go, and it is going to go. I'm told it's an old debate. My predecessors have tried to cut down, and I'm determined that we are going to cut down. It's a problem that I've been experiencing even when I was in MEC, that there's completely poor articulation between your foundation phase and your intermediate phase. Those kids are at loss, but to move from 3 or 4 subjects to 8 to 9. It's just not workable. So we're saying we're going to, because, and then that's where the problem, where the crisis arises. By the time they go to high school, they know very little, because they had to do everything in the world and end up not knowing anything finally. So we are going to cut down and make sure that we can focus and identify what is it that we are going to teach, which then will give them a solid foundation to go to matric. But they can't do all the things that we're doing. But we have to consult broadly. Again, when you give us a chance, we will also want to really come with the debate, so that I know people will be coming to you as the portfolio committee, which determines our lives. So they will come and want to lobby. So we also want to lobby you first to say, this is the direction we think we should be moving. Again, when you give us the opportunity, we're not prepared on that. So my colleagues will take the difficult ones, but it's around the difference between curriculum and
workbooks methodology and language.
Thank you very much, Minister. I must apologize to honorable members. I've got some of your names. I didn't get the others. I think because it's my first hearing, you'll forgive me. The next time I'll make sure I get everybody's names. Ms. Mashishi, the question around teacher-learner ratios, it's a very, very important question. There's a planning and resourcing process that we are embarking on that tries to address that question as well. In the system, in some cases, the learner-educator ratio has got to do with funding and teachers, but very often it's got to do with how many classrooms are available in the school. So in a sense, it's more of an infrastructure issue than it is a teacher issue that we've got to address. So clearly that is something on the program that we've got to address, and you're absolutely right, if we're going to be successful in implementing the curriculum, we've got to look at that issue as well. In terms of the second part of your question, curriculum assessment policy, I think the Minister has already answered that what we can do in 2010 we will do, but on the understanding that teachers, the system, no one must think that because of this review now what happened before is out completely. Teachers continue to teach at the beginning of the year in 2010 in accordance with what they've been doing. We will make certain changes which will be announced to them all in a timely and responsible manner, so there isn't confusion in the system. And as we go progressively, we'll implement the rest of the thing. So clearly, there isn't a need at this point in time for teachers to feel they don't know what to do until they get the policy document which tells them completely everything that needs to be done, because it is going to be done at one time. Ms. Ndra, I think the Minister has answered most of your questions. In relation to the question of lack of monitoring, where's Ms. Ndra? Not here. Okay, but I'll just answer the question just for the House. The National Education Evaluation and Development Unit is something that the Minister is pushing along quite strongly. It's in the process now of working out how to establish itself in terms of its scope of work, it's how it be constituted as an institution and so forth. And that's a key mechanism through which we're going to up the ante in relation to monitoring and evaluation. Clearly, the Performance Monitoring and Evaluation Ministry in the presidency is also something we will articulate with there. We've already had monitoring and evaluation capacity in the department. We want to link that to the district capacity. So clearly, that is an important issue. It relates to the other issue other members have raised around accountability. Now, clearly, we call it Education Evaluation and Development Unit because accountability and development needs to go hand in hand. One can't simply look at accountability on its own. You can't simply look at development on its own. And clearly those are part of an initiative where we're trying to integrate all the policies we have at the moment that deal with accountability and capacity development. Dr. Kloppers Lawrence, in terms of the process for textbooks, I'll ask one of my colleagues, would it be Mrs. Chebeka, to address the process there on how those national catalogs will be developed. And then in terms of pedagogy, the methodology, are we talking about a conventional approach or are we talking about group work? The important thing we say in the review is that the approach you use, whether it's group work or traditional approaches to teaching, that's not your primary activity as a teacher. It's a means towards something. So you, in a classroom, as the Minister's indicated, you've got some predetermined outcomes that you're going to achieve in that lesson. We want to ensure that teachers are able professionally to select the best method that will achieve the learning outcome. The problem we've had in the past, because, you know, people introduced it as a fad, teachers tended to focus on group work as opposed to what group work was supposed to achieve or any other methodology as opposed to what it wants to achieve. So to answer your question very simply, we want to develop the implementation of the curriculum and teacher development to ensure that appropriate methodologies are developed by teachers, that they have the capacity to do that from a pedagogic point of view, they have the content knowledge to carry it off, and they have the support materials that allow them to do it in the classroom. So in the absence of those things, whatever methodology one uses, the focus tends to be on the methodology rather than what is trying to be achieved. It's like a plumber focusing on their tools all the time rather than focusing on fixing up the pipe. So that's what we're trying to change there.
The minister has answered the question about OBE and OBE. Again, the second part of that question, and the honourable member there is one of the names I missed out, accountability and authority, and I've tried to address that.
Fonchana.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Clearly, that is, as I said, accountability and monitoring and evaluation. Those are all parts of the intervention, and it's very much a activity of the current macro organization of government. It's precisely what the presidency is trying to do. It's precisely what all national departments, especially coordinating departments like ours, are supposed to do. And very definitely from our minister's point of view and her remit as the coordinator of the sector is something that we regard as important. And Ms. Mashwana, I will ask my colleagues to answer the question about the hours. Edward, would you be able to take that one? Okay, in relation to Ms. Mashwana asked about the 25 hours, you know, because the system, how does it differ from one to the other? In relation to 1-5, Ms. Mashwana, we've actually got guidelines as to what must go into that file. So the issue you raised about there was a file currently that's got policy documents and there are other files. There isn't the danger that you raised, which is the real issue that we must mitigate, that people will think all the other files are unimportant. We're saying this is a consolidated file, and we're giving guidelines on what goes into that file, quite specifically. So that important risk we'll deal with. Again, the issue you raised about, it's important to say that we can emphasize textbooks, but how do we deal with the shortages? Again, there, that's an issue, funding, resourcing, working with provinces, ensuring that there's adequate budgets for textbooks to reach the schools. But in addition to that, you have seen from the adjustment budgets that the government is very serious about this question of adequate supply of learning materials, that an allocation has been made to the national department to ensure that this is a protected amount that sees to the fact that the priority that workbook textbooks are made available at least to grades 1 to 6. The honourable member sitting next to Ms. Mashwana, I apologize, I didn't get your name. My apologies, I'll get that during the break. You have a question?
Goodbye.
Okay. Thank you very much. The geographic difference you speak about, important again, how do we deal with rural schools and urban schools, and how do you account for the differences? Again, this is in many countries a big challenge, and there's two ways that you need to address it. One is, what kind of support do you offer for schools, especially those in rural areas, and how do you ensure an adequate teacher supply to those schools, and how do you make sure the teachers are developed? Again, we're not saying these are simple challenges, they're important challenges, but we're trying to address them through a whole range of things, some changes to the post-provisioning policy that we're looking at. Other one is in terms of district support. Other one is in terms of the bursaries we make available for teacher training, initial teacher training. We want to ensure that those teachers go first to those areas that are in greatest need in terms of poverty, but also in terms of geographic location. In terms of the question you asked about projects, the recommendation which we're implementing is recognizing projects are important. So project stays. All it's saying is that the volume, the number of projects, were too many. So we want one project per learning area. Because the problem with, as the minister said, with too many projects is parents and relatives and older siblings start doing the projects. Whereas project methodology is one of the best ways to learn. If a learner does it properly, it's one of the best ways to learn. But the learner must do it. If you give a learner 12 in a year, it becomes very difficult for that learner to learn anything at all. So we say, it must be a project, one per learning area, do it properly and focus again on the learning, not the product that their child develops.
Learning area, what do you mean by that? How does that translate in the number of projects that one is going to...
It depends on which level you at. So in the intermediate phase, the reduction will be down to 6. Yeah, so it will be 6 learning areas in intermediate, and then it will be 6 projects.
And also just to clarify that is as a formal assessment requirement. So for teachers who are able, as part of their teaching, to give more projects, they may, but as a formal assessment requirement, we just want one per learning area.
So what you're saying is that if I've taught division, long division, for example, and I want to hold a class test as opposed to giving a project assignment or whatever it is, I'll be at liberty to do so as a teacher. So you're not actually saying, what I'm hearing is that we're saying one project per learning outcome. We're saying if you're going to do an assessment by way of a project, make sure that it's only one project that you're doing per learning area.
It's a form of assessment. So you can use other forms of assessment in that learning area. Exactly, exactly.
Issue of projects. I mean, you've identified, I think Ms. Chubeka has identified now three times before this portfolio committee, that projects don't work because people take them home and it's actually the parents that are being assessed when these projects come back. Now, why is it that we're doing it in that way? Why can't we give time in class for projects?
You can't substitute. You can't use a task. If you're a good teacher, you can't really, after multiplications, give a project, but it can be a project. You can use assessment to check or use a test. A project should be much more bigger in terms of skills. It has to teach your kids to do research, and so it's a bigger skill that you want your kids to do, to see if they can look for information themselves, they can sift information, they can process information. So it's not anything you can do. So they're not easily interchangeable. And if you do it in class, you want kids to learn to work independent, because that's what the curriculum statement says. You want independent workers, and that's one exercise that helps your children to develop independence. You want your kids to be able, the principle that we're talking about, to be able to work as teams, collegiality. So through projects, you can build those other skills. Other exercises like assessment tests won't help you to achieve some of those objectives that are there. So your assessment also has to be linked to your objective, to your broad outcomes. And project is one of the key areas.
So there's some degree of balance in those outcomes.
So can I just say something on that area? Because my issue, I don't think from where I'm sitting, is to say whether or not project, is to say the support to the learner. The projects are important. For example, I'll tell you, my son was doing a project on banking. They had to go into a bank, do assessment, learn how banking is done, transaction and all that. And he can bank now. So that's one of the things that you get to see as a parent out of the child being able to learn. I might have not even thought that it's important for him to learn banking at this point. But out of that project that he had to do, he learned that and eventually could do it. But I'm just saying, hence my question was even linked to a township school, a rural, and also in terms of your class, your poor families, whereby sometimes a child might not be able to have resources to do that. What type of a support do we prescribe, for example, which type of areas or projects that the teacher can give to be able to ensure that the kids effectively learn out of that?
Thank you. My colleagues will pick up on the specifics of the support. Let me just confirm the issues that the revisions will put in place. Assessment is very definitely still emphasized, very strongly emphasized. There are different ways in which you can assess, and those are also guidelines are given, you know, tests. And a distinction is drawn between formal and informal assessments, those that must be recorded as assessments, and those that a teacher can do on a discretionary basis. Some of it is like just verbally asking kids questions, you know, some of it is homework, but we make a distinction between that and those assessments which must be recorded in terms of the requirements of the curriculum. In that context, one's got to see projects. And as the minister's indicated, the projects allow opportunities for learning that a normal test won't allow. It allows you to teach a learner how to access information, how to analyze that information, how to apply towards solving something or to answering a question. And because it's that intensive, the learning is much greater. And all the learners are absolutely correct that it depends at one level on the resources available to that learner. But also it depends very much on a teacher's understanding of the value, the education value of a project. The project that teachers give learners is not about seeing that final model. And I think it with my kids, sometimes the teachers mark the product. It's about how much that kid has learned. And I've been very frustrated often where I try to ensure that my child learns, but the teacher is more concerned about the product itself. So if I help my child has got higher marks. The question that we need to do in our teacher development is to make teachers recognize that children go through stages of learning. So even though the product sometimes in science, I mean, I study science, sometimes your conclusion of your experiment is a complete failure. But the point is, it's at times like those investigations that you learn the most as to others. So we need to teach teachers in development what is it that the project is supposed to do. It's not something that you need to put on display. It's about the child's learning. My colleagues will pick up on that in more detail. Teaching English, is that compulsory? First additional language, one of my colleagues will pick that one up. Teacher development, last question, again, my apologies, Honourable Member. What's your name? I'll get it from you.
I don't see you did.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Okay, Honourable Chairperson, you helped me in some cases. You pronounced it very clearly, so I managed to write it down. In others, I didn't get it. Yeah, no, that's why I got this one now. So, teacher development, you're absolutely right. We need to ensure consistency in approach. The problem previously is that, you know, post-94, we were swept with this very justifiable wave of democracy. And one of those waves of democracy was you don't prescribe a lot. And what tended to happen was this thing here about letting 1,000 flowers bloom, which is good, but like you say, the negative side of those are contradictions. What we're doing now, following the Teacher Development Summit, a very big summit involving all stakeholders, is to work out how best to deal with all of these issues in the teacher development arena. The institutional mechanisms, the funding, the content, service providers, and so forth. And that process, through that process, we hope to address some of these things. Because there are NGOs out there offering support. We want to encourage constructive NGO support. But we can't have a situation, as you say, where the teacher development is not consistent with the national curriculum statement, and in some cases they contradict each other. The reduction of learning areas my colleagues will speak to. Again, your point about focusing on the areas of greatest need. You make the point that all teachers need teacher development. We agree with you. Very definitely something we're going to focus on. What we also trying to say there is that in some cases, in some areas where teacher development has had a particular outcome with teachers' practice currently, in those cases, we need to understand that it's not simply equipping teachers to understand and teach the new curriculum. We may have to go into more detail than in other cases, but your point is taken, that it must be more widespread than that. In terms of the model used, I will ask my colleagues to respond to that, Mrs. Chebeka in particular, and in terms of the reduction of learning areas. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'll hand over. Professor Chisholm can come in as well, if she wishes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think with the reduction of learning areas, the Minister has responded. I am not too sure we want to say more. It is work that we will come with more detail on later. But maybe let me start with Dr. Klopper Lawrence's questions on workbooks and textbooks. Firstly, the way we have defined workbooks is that those are the books that children will write in. And currently, workbooks are being developed mainly in literacy and numeracy, aligned to the lesson plans. In the Foundations for Learning for grades R to 6, we've developed lesson plans. And for each of the 200 lesson plans that are there, there are 200 work pages in a workbook that children will then work to. So that's different to textbooks that are meant for use by both teachers and learners. And those are your usual textbooks. But the process that we have started to put in place in the department working with provinces is to actually design or develop national catalogs so that together we screen books and we put on a national catalog those books that we collectively agree are quality books. And it's very interesting, Minister, if I may share this, because we have developed catalogs for the FET
banned already for the upper level, and we're finalizing for grade R and 1, and we've called for submissions for grades 2 and 3 already. But it's a very involved process. For instance, for grades R and 1, the submissions we got were 9,000, a total of 9,000, and you've got together to look at, to develop your criteria very clearly, what makes for a quality book at that level. But what's been interesting is that suddenly the publishers are in a state of panic. They've been supplying this all along, but because there's national scrutiny now, they keep on asking for more time, and you wonder what it is that they've been supplying to the system all along. So it's a process that's really been quite worthwhile. So we've done the upper level. We're doing the lower grade, the foundation phase, and this is incremental. But ultimately, there will be a national catalog from which all schools, all provinces can procure books. Honorable Musana, the issue of fires, actually is more to, because it has been a stress factor for teachers. They have been asked to keep separate files. So you're not saying if they feel it's important for themselves to have a file that has policy documents that they may not do it. What we're saying is that there should be just one file on planning matters that is kept, that any curriculum advisor or all of us, you know, would want to see, so that you don't have separate files for learner assessment records, another file for your curriculum documents. You have one file that has all of those things that are necessary, and that's what the DG was talking about. We have said what the essential elements of this single file would be, and that's made very clear to the system. And the question that Honorable Kupai raises about how we deal with different schools, then, you know, I'd like to link it to the one issue that was raised on teacher training, to say all teachers need teacher training. What has come up very clearly is that because of the different contexts in which our teachers find ourselves, in which our schools are, you need a varied approach that actually responds to what is out there. Whether it is about the training of the teachers who are there, because what we are finding, in fact, is that the more rural the school, the less possibility you will find, it's not true in every instance, but the less possibility there is that you'll find properly qualified teachers, because they run away. Once they're qualified, they will go to where there are amenities, and therefore you find that your support to teachers is much more needed there. Targeted training, targeted resourcing, all of the things that you're talking about, and therefore in our approach and what we're proposing and in the way the department is beginning to do things is to say, how do you respond to the different contexts? One of the issues that came up very strongly during the review process, for instance, is the issue of multi-grade schools, which you find more in your rural areas, and we're responding to that. The issue of projects has been responded to. The teaching of English as a first additional language, again, it is about being responsive. It doesn't take away from, firstly, the responsibility of school governing bodies. It doesn't take away from the policy as it stands. It is simply a strengthening of the policy. The policy in response to the context that we're finding ourselves in. Many of your predominantly rural, mainly African schools continue to use as a preferred language of learning and teaching English. And we feel that as a department, if we don't respond to that, then we will not be responding to the challenges that face the country. So firstly, it is strengthened support for the teaching of in the foundation phase in your indigenous languages. But in recognition of the role that English then plays, the strengthened teaching and the early introduction, as indicated by policy in grade one, of English as a first additional language, and certainly strengthening its teaching. It is not to negate the role and the place of the other languages like Afrikaans, but you're responding to what the real context in relation to the majority of our children in the system is.
Let me move off that question, because I do think that it's the first part that is perhaps underplayed in terms of what it is that the department has by way of plans for the future. It's the strengthening of home language learning in the first instance. I think that's a huge problem given the kind of outcomes that we're getting in terms of tests and so on. What is it there that you've identified as the difficulty, and what is it that the thinking is?
What we've identified, firstly, let me start with the one that is not so educational. The issue of preference by parents as a result of how they have perceived the role of English and the place of English in society. And therefore, we have found that, in fact, some parents, despite the evidence educationally, would still say they want their children educated in English as they enter the system. That is beginning to die down. But the major ones that are very educational, it's materials for effective teaching in your indigenous languages in those areas. So we're engaging with publishers for the development of materials that are relevant, and that's beginning to show, to bear fruit. The second one is the availability of teachers who are equipped to teach effectively in those home languages. And again, the acting DG spoke about the bursaries that we give. The bursaries that we give for initial teacher preparation, which target quality graduates, are slanted, for instance, to foundation phase teaching, to teachers who will qualify and be able to teach in indigenous languages. And we have even given, we've ring-fenced that to say, if you cannot give us teachers who can do that, then the money will go to those institutions that can do that. And we're beginning to see again, you know, new teachers coming in. So we've seen our role as resourcing for the teacher, I mean, adequately. And if you look at our foundations for learning materials, for instance, and your workbooks, they are in all indigenous languages because we don't have quality materials from publishers ready-made in those indigenous languages. So you're right, Che, it is strengthening of resourcing both in terms of materials and teachers so that we can have quality teaching. And then alongside that, strengthening of the effective teaching of English as a language so that children are able to use it for learning later on. The last one that I will respond to is the issue of teacher training. I've alluded to it just very briefly, but again, what the department is beginning to do very strongly, guided firstly by the National Policy Framework on Teacher Education and Development, as well as the summit processes, is to not allow just anybody to train, but to allow people to train on accredited programs. And therefore, the NGOs you are talking about now are, you know, being required to actually register the programs that they train on so that we can be assured of the quality. But to respond to the issue that you raise about every teacher needing training, what is in the policy framework which we're looking, I mean, the DG spoke about the systems. We're looking at the system to manage that, but every teacher, we're working towards every teacher acquiring professional development points over a period of three years, which will make sure that in a three-year cycle, you acquire these professional development points so that a teacher has the responsibility themselves to ensure that they register for these programs on teacher development. The ones that we as a system want to drive are the ones that are targeted, that are focused, that take training and support where it's most needed. But the responsibility for ongoing professional development will still remain in the system, and teachers will also have to take responsibility for that. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, if I were to make two comments on matters, the one is on the issue of the hours that are spent and the project. And maybe let me give an indication, not to necessarily lead this issue of the project. One of the recommendations in the context of the project has also been that the Department of Basic Education subject specialists, as a form of support, must develop a range of projects per learning area, per subject, that would take into account the different contexts, and these will be made available to teachers so that teachers would get to understand the different types of projects that they could actually be able to look into and provide for learners. And I think that's an important support element that is being developed in the department that we should make available. And this will be available already for teachers in the beginning of the year 2010. So that's an element. Chair, as it relates to the issue of hours, that we have to have the number of hours, teaching for the number of hours that have been indicated, the honourable member is correct that in the current context, policy actually indicates that there is 22 hours for the foundation phase, there is 26 and a half hours for the intermediate phase. What the recommendations have begun to point to, and I think it's a matter that we would have to carefully look at, is how you then reorganize the timetabling at the level of the school to ensure that there is maximum teaching taking place. And so the number of hours that you see there is that which begins to point out at the minimum that is required to ensure that we'll take care of the teaching requirements at the level of the school. And it is therefore an issue that deals more with how you help schools, because many of the other schools have also complained about the element of timetabling itself, and it's how you ensure curriculum coverage within timetabling, and that's a matter that you want to put on the table.
I'll just address the issue of the centralized oversight. I think that's the only issue that has not been addressed. The report makes absolutely fascinating reading, particularly on this issue, because that was also something that was recommended in the 2002 review. And what the report says happened between 2002 and now is that, in fact, there wasn't centralized oversight, and as a result, there were multiple interpretations at different levels of what the curriculum was. So teachers were often ending up implementing not the revised national curriculum statement, but in fact the earlier curriculum, thinking it was the national curriculum statement. And so in order to forestall that kind of thing happening, different interpretations of the curriculum happening at different levels of different administrations and so on, in order for that not to be permitted to happen, what the report advises and recommends is that the DG in September of every year announces the one curriculum and assessment policy statement that will prevail for the next year or whatever, and that there will not be, there should not be, as a matter of policy, these different interpretations that have occurred over the last while.
I think just to recap, I think the overall message really is about ensuring a degree of synergy in the curriculum, in ensuring a degree of balance in terms of the outcomes, both in terms of strengthening individual learning abilities as well as working in groups to develop competence in both critical assessments as well as developing core fundamental basics in learners. And really, I mean, the key words for me is this balance. I mean, this seems the most obvious thing to just restore some degree of balance without necessarily taking things to a level of huge instabilities. The one message if we can possibly from our side just make to you or to give to you would be this, that in the communication. And we know that this has been a nightmare for yourselves as a national department, because you do rely on provinces, you do rely on districts, you do rely on regions and so on. But that the communications are, in fact, as simple as possible and as clear as possible. So that, for instance, the issue of the projects, that we don't have, instead of trying to reduce the number of projects, that you actually have a huge proliferation of projects happening because of the communication that goes out. So that we're quite clear that this is meant to assist teachers in terms of the extent of work and overload, but also to ensure that the outcomes that we get in terms of what is happening in our schools, that those are improved. I think if those objectives are communicated, people then read the context in terms of what you're trying to say. So I do think that when you do communicate, that those objectives need to be specified quite clearly. We have some time for a second round. I saw Mr. Makubela, but now he's not indicating anything. Ah, okay, there we go, Mr. Smiles. I'm looking at the back, nothing there. Dr. Kloppus-Lawrence, Ms. Gina, or should I say Ms. Mashishi? Okay, in that order. Are you waving at me, Ms. Mashwana, or are you putting up your hand?
Can we have a second
book? You can, but you needed to put your hand up when I said, okay, put your hand up. Okay, so you'll be the last one, right?
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. The one thing one wanted to check with the minister and department is that earlier on it was said that there are particular schools that are performing well even under the circumstances without these particular reforms. So they were highly creative, they were very professional, they achieved the outcomes. They were sites of excellence. With these reforms about to take place, what are we saying to those schools? My understanding will be that we may want them to remain as excellent as they used to be without having to limit their own potential, their own innovations, and so on and so on. But I thought we need to be able to communicate something. If people are doing their hard work and they are achieving results, and you come with some standards that sort of reduce what they used to do, you are likely to see them reducing whatever efforts they were putting in place to still achieve that. So I'm saying perhaps the department should be clarifying that part now. The second, which to some degree was answered as they were remarking or responding to other questions, is teacher shortage. To me, it's going to be a very serious challenge. We may not want to downplay it, because as you introduce things and so on, we should be sure or guaranteed that we'll be able to take the curriculum as reformed through, and that will be highly dependent on availability of teachers. And if there's shortage, you can already tell that there's going to be some degree of challenges. I wouldn't say we'll fail to achieve in certain areas, but I think it's an area which should be attended to almost immediately or with some sense of urgency. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, now I'm still in big trouble with the text man, so. Well, maybe it will happen today, but you'll see. At least I've got the committee members and everybody else in this room to help me and to assist me.
If you go and stand in the chamber, you can claim privilege.
Yes, but the minister is here, so I'm protected. Chairperson, you will rule me out of order if I repeat some of the questions that have been asked already. Let me start by saying, I want to commend the minister, you know, for taking the steps and the department for taking the steps to come up with solutions for the criticism which was leveled against the system or the statement, and also for the underperformance of the learners and the teachers as well. I think the minister must be supported. Whilst I'm saying that, the minister also challenged us to say, you must sing from the same song sheet, and that is where in particular I am challenged because I don't have that song sheet to sing from, and I'm referring now to the 5-year plan which I thought we should have received in this meeting, because according to the executive summary there is a time frame connected to the recommendations. And one of the recommendations say October 2009 there's a 5-year plan. I would love to see a draft at least. I know it will not be a final product at this stage. Maybe there must be a first draft of the 5-year plan. I would imagine that is the songbook that we should sing from. So the department can please explain that one. Chairperson, then whilst I was on the report, I think the report is very good, and there's a lot of encouraging issues there. Then my specific question was with regard to a very important finding, and that is with regard to support to teachers. I think, once again, the department must be commended on that one. But having said that, and I see their specific focus on subject advisors, which I fully agree to. But, honorable members, the classroom is the activity, is the place where the curriculum is delivered. Then the classroom is part of a school where you have extracurricular activities as well. So whilst you're emphasizing the subject advisors that will have to assist and support the teachers to deliver the curriculum, what about the EDOs? I used to call them school inspectors. What is the role of the school inspectors? Because I think I've seen that, I haven't seen a lot of that, of the EDOs in the report. And may I then also say that I didn't in detail looked at the report. I might have missed it, but in the executive summary for sure, there's on the subject advisors, there is a lot of been said and the focus, but what about school inspectors? Because a school inspector should actually, go to a school, get a general feeling, and then ask a subject advisor or this specialist or this support group, go to this school to do that. Because if that is not happening, then the EDOs then must get some other job, or the school inspectors. Chairperson, then lastly, and I don't want to complicate the matters for the department. In fact, I would like to say, whilst we are giving support and focused on the support for the teachers, which is very good, what is the support that in the report, the basket that we give to the learners in terms of support? To say, okay, I know that the school nutrition program is there. We know that there are, it is envisaged to do health checks on the foundation phase. What else do the department foresee is a sort of a support for the learners as well, in addition or to what they have already established? May I also say that maybe to refine even that is there, and to make sure that it's effective and the support is going to the learners. Thank you, Chair.
Comrade Chair, Honorable Makubela partly covered me on the shortage of teachers. But again, I think as the Department of Basic Education, I know it's not your terrain, but you have mentioned it in the report as to say the higher education, the higher educational institutions, they must be required to have training programs that are in line with the national curriculum documents. And I think really we that needs to be emphasized, because the little educators that we get now, really they don't fit to the stream that is being offered in the school. I really think both departments of education that we have now, you need to work very hard towards that, to make sure that the quality of educators that are being produced in the high institutions. I know they talk of their autonomy, they know what programs to offer, but really for now, for this period of the OPE that has been implemented, we did not get much of the educators that were of help to us. That is why we talk so much of the shortage of educators. So I think it's one of the areas that we need to concentrate more on. And also, can I talk of we have talked of support for educators, subject advisors, and whatever. Yes, we did make mention of the Elsen schools, the support that needs to be given, but really, can it be can you prioritize those ones? Maybe I'll just cite one example from my constituents. We've got a number of these Elsen, these specialized schools, where last year, maybe most of them, they got 1% in their matric results and whatever, and basically what they say is that they don't get the necessary support that they need to get those educators that are faced such with those learners. If ever we can have the subject advisors are really that have specialized in those areas, or whoever, even if they're not specialized, but can they take those institutions as a priority, because really they're being left behind, and now it's an acceptable thing that anyway the learner can go to those schools, be pushed, but they'll never pass matric, because the teachers will always complain of the lack of support that they get from the Department of Education. Please, if that area can be prioritized, I think it can be good.
Three short questions. When will the subject allocation for grades 1 to 6 be finalized? We know there are teams ready to write the learning material and they have a deadline ahead of them, which is, I think, September 2010. Second question is in connection with the approach to multilingualism. Certain departments expect schools to offer a third language, but there's only time for the home language and the first additional language. How should the third language be accommodated time-wise in the school day? And then the third question is in connection with the PASS requirements. PASS requirements were announced this year for implementation in 2010. The report also refers to PASS requirements to be implemented in 2011. Are these the same requirements? And then just a question for Mr. Ibrahim. He refers to teachers as, I'm not sure whether I misunderstood him, are they curriculum developers or not? Do they form part of the curriculum development process?
Thank you, Chairperson. Is it my turn? Okay, thanks. On the workload, I believe it's a very short question. The workload that we are talking about, which we all agree that the workload needs to go down, but it's like we are looking at a particular level that where it happens. At the school level, but then the schools they are controlled or assisted by the circuits, and now we are seated with a circuit manager who have 60% of their time at the school level, but then they come back and do a lot of writing because they must report to Umalusi, they must report three different departments of education only of exam section. You give them marks at the end of the term, second term, third and fourth, such that the workload is a mess there. And one would check if the workload of this circuit manager can be given to some of the curriculum advisors, because most of them are running around not really knowing what they are doing. Thank you.
Let me just take one question around highly performing schools and what the implications are. Because I have my own personal experience around that issue. What the guidelines are saying, they are putting minimums. So it's not saying you cannot do two projects, but you are saying for a requirement you only have one project. So schools are not discouraged from doing minimums. And why I want to take this question, so, you know, when I was appointed MEC in Gauteng in 2004, the first thing I did was to convene meetings of principals and say to them, here am I, new MEC, what is it that I can do to make, so that we can improve education in Gauteng? And those were even some of your top schools in your Pretoria East, so we went to cluster schools. And the first thing, the top schools, which are in your top 100, I mean those Pretoria East schools are some of your top schools, they all complained about work overload. So it's not as if this was not it was a national problem. And that's why when I was appointed, the first thing I did to the DG to say, DG, if there's anything I've always wanted to be a minister for, it's this curriculum story, let's talk. And fortunately, I got that the department themselves, because we've been raising just MECs, to say, we are getting numerous complaints, even from our best performing schools, to say there are challenges around the implementation of the curriculum. So when the minister set up the task team, it was not an event. It was because for all the times when we were raising to the minister to say there are challenges, and that's why when I got into the department, I did find that she had already established a task team. There were terms of reference. All I had to do is to say, go to the field, because that's the first thing we have to do. So it was not as if, as I say, something that was thumbsack, but it's been a process, and we're quite aware that it affects even your best of schools. So it's not, it won't affect them in any way. It's going to really improve, because we're getting those indications from them. It's going to improve, it's going to relief, bring relief to them, and these are minimums. So those schools can do more than that, but it will really, and these ideas we got from teachers, right, and across the board, we got from submissions from teachers across the board. So it won't affect them. I think it's going to enhance their work, because these are the things we got from them. So it's not our clever ideas to say there was this problem. Teachers have been pointing it.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Certainly, I think the draft idea plan, Monica, we'll send that through to the portfolio committee. Regarding teacher shortages, I think that it varies from one area to the other area. It's indeed an important issue to address. And as I said earlier on, in some cases, the issue is classroom shortages as opposed to teacher shortages that's creating the problem. But I'm not underplaying the problem, that there are problems with teacher shortages in some instances. The question of subject advisors, EDOs, Mr. Chebeka, that's your area as well. Support to learners, what else, you know, school nutrition program. Apart from the health and school nutrition program issues, Mr. Chebeka, I'll bring that one up, as well as the HEIs, the accreditation of learning programs. Dr. Kloppers Learns directed a question directly at me around curriculum teachers and curriculum developers. It's a very important question. As professionals and as teachers, intrinsic to their work is that they are curriculum developers. So I don't think anyone is saying that one wants to take that out and teachers must be purely purveyors of prescriptive sheets that we give them. No one is suggesting that. But it's a question of balance, as the chairperson said. What we've done in the past was to expect too much of teachers, even within the bounds of their professionalism. We expected teachers some level to develop their own materials and so forth. Now, we know, many people who've taught and others know, that's a difficult enterprise. You can do it to an extent, and as teachers become more experienced, they enjoy the pleasure of doing that. But as a system, we've got to provide the basic content. We've got to provide basic textbooks and so forth, and in that context, encourage teachers to practice their craft as curriculum developers, because curriculum development is not purely about the learning material. It's also about the methodology you apply, you know, how you analyze the learning context. It embodies the professionalism. So I don't know if I understood your question correctly, but I hope I've answered it on a bit. Martin, I'm going to say again, Mrs. Chebeka will deal with that question. And then, yeah. The rest of the questions, workbooks as well. Okay, let me hand over to Mrs. Chebeka first.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe just to add one comment to the issue that the DG has raised on teacher shortage. And I think, DG, I'm raising it because I think we need the assistance of committee here. What we have done, while we acknowledge that the issue of teacher shortage is an issue that we need to deal with, we have, however, been confronted with two issues that we cannot understand. Firstly, we've got a database that we keep in the Department of Education of qualified unemployed teachers. And in that database, we have two sets, actually. We have one of local teachers. We have one of teachers that are your foreign teachers, mainly your Zimbabwean teachers. We've made it available to the provinces. We continue to hear of teacher shortages, but nobody really employs from that. So for us it is an issue because we have said if you really have problems with teachers, here is a set of qualified teachers. So there may be other things at play as well here. The second thing is, now my age shows when it comes to this because there are two issues around teacher shortage. So I'll skip the second one and until I can remember it, if you don't mind, Chair. But in terms of the second one is around our
bursary program that I've referred to, the Funza Lushaka bursary program. That targets, we've recruited quality students into quality programs to address areas that the system has identified as areas of need. Again, we're not having 100% placement of those teachers, and that is something that we need to engage with. We cannot understand why this is happening when the system is saying we have problems with teacher shortage. The area of curriculum advisors, Mr. Smiles, there are two issues here. There are two processes. Firstly, one linked to the curriculum, which is about curriculum support, and you're looking at curriculum advisors and the role they should be playing. But alongside that is a process that focuses on districts themselves. Who is in districts? What do they do? What are their roles and responsibilities? So what you will find lifted in this particular report is the issue of curriculum advisors, because we're looking at curriculum implementation, but that doesn't mean that's the only thing we're looking at. So we take the point, and you take the point that was raised at the end about saying maybe even the workload is not adequately spread out in the district offices themselves, and that's what we're looking at in the curriculum development process. The issue I'd like, DG and Minister, if you don't mind, to put the issue of learner support within that same basket, except that maybe we can have our colleagues who deal with this issue to make a full presentation. But in the way we're looking at districts, we're looking at districts and the complete role that they should be playing, including support to learners. Because support to learners is not only for the 3 R's. It's support to learners in a holistic way, including those learners, including sporting activities, so extracurricular activities. We're not just looking at learning mathematics or literacy, but that's what is looked at in the district support. Chair, the other issues are really well taken, the issue of support for ELSEN learners, but maybe let me look at the issue of higher education institutions and the role that they play. You are right, it's been listed in the report, but there are two processes that are on even now, and I must say, in fact, our engagement with higher education institutions, with the faculties of education in particular, has just been very robust over the years, and we believe that they will come to the party. But the process that's happening now is to refine the norms and standards for educators that have needed to be revised over the years to be aligned to where we are currently. But also the team, as the Minister would know, the team on teacher education is currently having workshops with higher education institutions to look at their curricula and how responsive their curricula are. So that is something that's being looked at. In relation to the issue of learning areas, and I want to put the learning area together with the debate around multilingualism. Because those are, and here I speak under correction, the Minister might want to say what her position is on this matter much more sharply. Unfortunately, I missed her meeting yesterday when she gave much more focused guidance. But one of the things that we lift in the report is that the issue of learning areas is not a thing that you can just declare like that. It has implications. So what the Minister says, she is committed, and there she's not going back, to reducing the number of learning areas. It's not something that we can easily say we will implement in 2011 necessarily. The work will start now. But that's one of the areas where you will need to look at the implications very clearly, because if you do that, there may be implications for teacher deployment. There are teachers who are teaching those learning areas. We may have to go to the ELFC to sort out those issues. There are issues around publishers being ready with the materials, because there are materials now that are produced in particular ways. So the Minister, once we've done that work for him, may say, I want it finalized for implementation by 2011, I want it finalized for implementation by 2012. But I think it would be irresponsible of us now to give time frames that are definitive when that kind of unpacking hasn't been done. And the Minister has said, if we could be allowed on some of the issues to come back. The issue of multilingualism is an issue. The issue of the strengthening of the implementation of the language in education policy is one area that the Minister has lifted. And again, Minister, if we could just come back on that one to give a much more informed presentation to the portfolio committee on which they can engage. I don't want to give off-the-cuff answers. Minister,
the issue that they have been asked again by I always struggle, Dr. Klopowski Lawrence, yes, with double diversity, but the past requirements. You are right, the DG did, to strengthen the issue of quality in the DT band in particular, put out progression and promotion requirements that are for implementation, but the discussion in 2010. The discussion with the curriculum people and schools has been that they are and agreed to by the heads of education are certain condonations until the work that's being done by the teams on the curriculum and assessment policy document is finalized, so that they begin to bite in 2011. They are being phased in 2010. So they will be used in 2010, but schools have been given guidelines on condonations that will apply based on those promotion progression requirements that were sent out by the DG, by DG Hindle. Thank you.
Thank you, Kay. The Minister and DG have already covered quite a number of the aspects around the teacher shortage issue, but I just wanted to add some information that I think would be quite useful for members present, and that is that in terms of the funding arrangement for the next 2 years, for the 2010-2011 year, 250 million rand has been set aside for something to the equivalent of 1,200 posts, and the target would be largely for those schools that are for our poorest schools that would have an excess of 40 learners per class. For the 2011-2012 year, a further 1.8 billion has been set aside for teacher supplies. So I think that is a very optimistic, set of issues to bear in mind. And certainly we would look to provinces to be able to actually action that quite effectively. There's our challenges. If I may also just add one other point, and that's around communications. I think that the message has been heard loud and clear, I think, through the review process, and that is that a central, clear message has to go out. So there's a very comprehensive communication strategy that's been developed together with the curriculum sections for us to be able to go out and take our lead from the Minister's office and DG's office in communicating that clear message. DG has already indicated that there will be a sort of set of guidelines that will go to teachers, but there's also an aim to provide as much public information as possible. So in the strategy, we've included radio programs and through the Mbiza process also for us to begin to inform the public largely, because we see the schools being owned by communities, and therefore communities must be informed as to what ought to be happening there. We can provide more details around that separately to members so that you can see what that strategy includes. But I think that just to give the undertaking that has been made quite a serious or a serious set of commitments have been made around that to support the curriculum review process. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I thought that we have an opportunity quickly with the Minister still here for the next few minutes. To just take a briefing from you, Minister, on the state of affairs in this province with regard to the disruptions of matric exams. Won't you please take the floor on this issue?
No, thank you, Chair. On Friday, I got a call from the MEC of Western Cape to tell me that they were experiencing disruptions from courses, learners were pushing learners out. And myself, we both agreed on what should be done, said call the police, get them to arrest whoever is responsible, and instructed the office to condemn in the strongest terms and sent my political advisor to go to Western Cape to really check what the issues were. And we did, from the interactions with the community and people who were causing all the confusion, It became clear that it's an issue that the MEC had also reported to us, that there are these finishing schools, and they've done an assessment of these finishing schools and found that they were unproductive and very expensive to run, as a result taking money away from the main system. And he, with the powers which he has decided that he is giving notice the school in Langa, which is a finishing school, won't continue. He gave me statistics at that previous meeting to say, and he really demonstrated that indeed the school, these finishing schools were unproductive. And I must say, Chet, it's a phenomenon which is done by other provinces. For instance, when we were in Gauteng, we didn't run finishing schools. So it's not as if it's a requirement for a province to run a finishing school. What our attitude was, and which I still hold as a minister, is that there are limited resources, therefore there are limited opportunities, which our kids have to understand this. What we are obliged as a state is 12 years of education. Anything beyond that is a luxury. So it's not like we were obliged. And I did say to the minister, to say, if you decide it's unproductive, you consulted with the committee, given enough warnings, you feel you can't carry it. As I say, it's not a national requirement. It's not the province that decided to do within his powers to discontinue them as long as it's given people notices to look for alternatives. So that was a source of contention. So the paper they were disrupting was the English paper. An assessment was done on the damage in terms of the disruptions, and indeed they were serious. As a result, we are going to have the two African schools to rewrite the paper. We're looking for a date again, which is unfortunate for the matric learners who had already started exams, because it's not only the disruption of the exams, but that's the anxiety of disturbing people in the middle of an exam. But as I said, it's an unfortunate situation. So we are going to have English 1 additional paper, which is the literature paper rewritten. I'm not sure if the date has been sorted in. From my stand, because it's not a political issue, it's a criminal issue, I've refused to even engage with learners. So I think politicians who are affected, we will engage with that matter. But from my stand, it has been caused to say, go and talk to Kosas. And I said, it's really a criminal issue, and we can't really dignify it by engaging with them. So there will be processes that I think the community in Western Cape will engage on, but as a minister, we will not necessarily get involved in. I've supported the MEC in terms of the actions it's taken, and we stand by those decisions. Our concern is what happens with the outstanding exams. We get reports where the MEC has been keeping us informed that it's calm now. Police are there all the time to make sure that we don't have future disruptions. On Monday, yesterday, I didn't get any report of a disruption. Today, students have not had any report. So our assumption is that the situation is under control. But we have to say we're very anxious and really condemned in the most strongest term. We did report to the presidency, who also supported us, to say we treat it as a criminal act. It's not even a political issue, and we deal with it as a criminal act on the part of those who disrupted schools. So that's what our position is as government.
Okay, I think that's clear enough, unless members want to ask any questions. I think that's perfectly clear. Thank you very much, Minister, for that, because I do think that, and without engaging any people here, I'm sure that everybody here is ad idem on this issue. I do know of this matter when it started in terms of the issue of the finishing schools. I did refer some people to the department. I know some MPLs engaged me from the Western Cape Legislature at the time when the decision was made. At no stage were we aware that there was anything beyond requests coming through to relook at the decision and so on. And my own sense accords with yours that this is a criminal act and something that we simply cannot support, and I'm sure that we all condemn it in the strongest possible terms. So with that in mind, can we just also encourage members to ensure that where there are these kinds of tensions in your constituencies and so on, that at the earliest opportunity that you do communicate those things before they they end up in enormously difficult situations, as this one did, unfortunately. So, and we trust that the department certainly in the province will be prosecuting and following those cases up, and if there's any further assistance that we can lend as MPs and public representatives, do let us know as well.
Has interdicted SASCO as an organization, that it should not be closer to the premises, and support that interdict also, that they must interdict them, they must not get closer the premises of schools. So we support also the interdict.
I'll ask you a question. How do we prevent this kind of behavior in future? Because I think it's possible.
So we can't predict. Just say, I mean, I was quite shocked when they said there was these disruptions. I really, as I say, it was one of those very depressing issues of people who can think they can disrupt other learners for exams because they had even further opportunities. They were given the opportunity to write matric. They failed to use the opportunity. Then they are going to disrupt people who are using a fresh opportunity. Sometimes as if they were denied their opportunity. So I really would find it difficult to say how, but I think we have to be more vigilant, but we can't predict in a society. It's a very unfortunate situation, which is completely unacceptable. And maybe if we use hard force the way Western Cape is doing and we're supporting them, it might actually discourage people any time to take chances with us. Because I did say to the MEC, use all the laws in your hands to protect people. It's our responsibility to also protect others in this instance. So it might deter them if we become firm enough in this instance and make sure that no one else can repeat that. So we even support the interdict.
Let me then just round up the meeting by thanking all of you for participating today. I do think that it's good news that things seem to be coming together as a department now, and that we're starting with some of the fundamental things that requires perhaps overhaul and a great deal of your attention and commitment over this next while. Let me also assure you of our support in this regard, and if there's anything that we can assist with, please do not hesitate to do that. We will, of course, engage with you on the strategic plan, as you've suggested earlier. So it's really, through Randall, Sandenheffer, and others, if we can get your proposals as soon as possible for a timetable, because we do have to submit our program as well as Parliament forward so that we can get permission to utilize our budgets and so on. And then, of course, one of the things that we'd be very keen to do is very early next year is to come again to the department in the run-up to the budget and come and do a stint with the new department as it's reconstituted in terms of its new organogram and so on. One of the things may I request that we try and do, and I know that we've got a new acting DG and we've got a whole lot of things. I know a lot of you are busy straddling to three departments, some of you two departments and so on. And I know that, and we haven't, we've tried to stave off making excessive demands of you, of your time and certainly your resources and so on. But it is quite important that when things happen, such as the organogram, such as the strategy document and so on, and other important things, that we get told about it formally through the channels of Parliament so that we don't find out. And I think the thing that irks members most is finding out in the newspapers things that we should have known as the Portfolio Committee. Now, I know that this, and I've raised it with the DG for Education, and he's explained to me that it's been incredibly difficult on everybody, this running three departments in one. But please let us. I think part of the reason why we, as public representatives, particularly going out into our constituencies, cause so much of confusion, really, is because we ourselves are not in the know about certain developments, and particularly around plans such as the review and so on. So if things are going to happen for next year, let us know about it so that we will immediately communicate with all members who are already in their constituencies and so on, and then there would be no excuses for information going wrong and all kinds of confusion. So that, as you keep saying, that we should be singing off the same hymn book and, what is it, song page, Mr. Smart?
Yes.
Okay. So on that note, thank you very much. We will I will be circulating a press statement to members in your pigeonholes, hopefully, or else at your in your emails, calling for submissions on public hearings that we hope to have next year. And you'll see that it is in line with some of our broad discussions that we had very early on when we were first constituted around the issue of access and quality. I would very much appreciate members circulating that press statement, calling on those written submissions in their constituencies, to their schools in particular, because remember, part of our discussions has been that we want to hear from teachers and principals of schools, and not so much from the so-called experts who constantly write to us and who are engaged with issues around education, but actual practitioners and their experiences. So that will be coming to you, and I thought to mention it to you so that you don't actually get a huge surprise when it's in your pigeonhole, but just to say to you that it arises from our previous discussions and our previous commitments in this regard. When we will actually be having those hearings is open-ended as yet. We haven't finalized dates. As you know, in this parliament, it becomes very difficult because there's so many stakeholders, and our program for next year has not even been finalized. So it does become difficult for us to stipulate exactly when, but we're hoping to do it at the point where the school year comes or the term comes to an end, and the next day is a weekday, or at least the next Monday is a weekday, or at least the Friday is a weekday, if you know what I'm trying to get at, because part of the problem is we don't want to take, if teachers, when we do get to the oral stage of hearings, and we want teachers to come to us, or principals, we don't want to take them out of their schools. So we're trying to identify a date that coincides with just a day before the breakup or something of that sort. But we'll get back to you, and we are going to also ask the department through you, Acting DG, to assist us with getting that press statement out to each and every school so that particularly those schools in the far-flung areas of our country, so that we do hear from those remote schools and the rural schools as well. On that note, let me wish you all a pleasant absence from Parliament. I know that a lot of you are not going on holiday, despite the popular refrain in the media and so on, that you're all going to go to your constituencies where you're going to have to report back on really quite a hectic session. And let me wish you all well over the festive season. I hope you spend some quality time, a restful time with your families. There used to be a chairperson in this parliament who used to say goodbye with this refrain, and he used to say, if you drink, drink a lot. If you drive, don't drink. So on that note, thank you very much, and have a good rest, everybody. Thank you.